work. That's me. Wait a minute.
Preparing to live stream, so everybody smile.
It's a microphone setting.
We hear you now, Steve.
I love the way Steve talks to himself.
Can you guys
hear? Oh, hey, Donnie. Yeah, we got Donnie.
Wait, here I am. Okay. I don't have Wi-Fi. I hope this works right now.
Okay, it looks like it appears we're live. And so you can start taping.
Can you guys hear?
Oh, hey, Donnie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got Donnie.
Wait, here I am.
Oh, there's a lot of latency.
Okay, it looks like it appears we're live.
Okay, that's not happening.
And so you can start taping.
Well, I'm going to have to go with it.
Okay. You're taping, Nicole. Here we go. Who's got the Washington? Oh, that's Steve's background. Okay.
All right. Did we want to wait for Melinda?
Melinda will be late. We'll just call me when she comes in. We'll get her to go because we're going with Jay first. All right.
Okay. Well, gentlemen and everybody at White House UFO. What, Grant, what do you say? Good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you're at in the world.
We are in the world tonight. Thanks for taking time to join us tonight. We're having a disclosure panel, and we're going to let the young guys and the young girls take over. We got Nicole with some orbs flying around there, and we have everybody except for Melinda Leslie, who will be probably coming in. And so we're going to discuss the latest in the disclosure story. And what are you calling it, Nicole? You're joining me here. Is Nicole Sakic? Nikki?
I keep calling it the disclosure party panel, but
okay.
I think we're going to discuss the post-article spin out. And I think everybody knows what I mean when I say the articles in the New York Times. And yeah, all related topics. There was some news that dropped today that I think Bob will share with us as well. But tonight we're going to kick it off with Jay from Project Unity. So
I will maybe introduce the panel. You put the panel together. So give me who's on the panel.
Well, we have Jay from Project Unity, and we have Bob McGuire, also known as Science Bob, and he frequents the Dolanite chat rooms as well as SOR. We have Dr. Joseph Buckman, a man who needs no introduction.
You know what I love is how we have the vertical bearded section here.
Oh,
just I like it.
Very cool.
I don't know. I'm there. Do I have a beard? What's going on?
You're in the aspiring bearded section.
We also have Tom Whitmore with us tonight, who is an avid researcher and part of the MUFON board of directors. We have Steve Bassett. He's down here on my left-hand side. We look like the Brady Bunch of disclosure. This is great. We also have Dave Scott from Spaced Out Radio, and we have Danny Silva from the Silver Record. So it's going to be a good discussion.
Beautiful. Thanks for that. I mean, we're going to start, I guess, with Jay from the UK, because it's the middle of the morning there. He's got coffee, but we don't want to, in case he falls asleep. We'll start with him, and I guess the only question I would have, bring us up to date on what you've learned. You had a conversation with the authors of the New York Times article. Congratulations on that. And so bring us up to date on how you got that interview, and have you got any other big scoops for us?
Thank you, Grant. Very happy to be here, and thank you everyone who's watching at the moment. In regards to the interview that I was lucky enough to get, for a lot of people who haven't heard of my channel, which isn't surprising because it's quite small, it would have probably been a bit of a shock to suddenly see it pop up on this little channel. The whole background to like me actually managing to get that interview is a bit of a long story, but it involves my coverage of the Admiral Wilson leaks and my ongoing pursuit of making a production regarding the Admiral Wilson leaks, which is what I'm kind of aiming on doing. And that's a background production that's been... To cut a very long story short, I put out a breakdown, a three-hour and I think 17-minute breakdown of the Admiral Wilson leaks. This was primarily done by my colleague who goes by Mr. X, who some of you know. And basically, we just went through the entire documents word for word. And Mr. X has like an encyclopedic knowledge on the Wilson documents that he was putting in program names and different people that were connected that I didn't have any idea about. And I probably have never been able to find on my own. And a lot of these people are still alive, you know, and could be called to testify, either go on record or, you know, even get called to go into Congress. So the breakdown, when I put that out, within about 24 hours, I think Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal got in touch with Mr. X and myself and essentially asked if we would be, you know, politely asked if we'd be willing to take down the video because they were looking to, you know, pursue this type of story for the New York Times. And they essentially thought that the amount of information in this was, you know, quite data intensive and they wanted to keep it under the radar while they were working on the story. And, you know, me and Mr. X discussed this. Mr. X and Richard Dolan discussed it as well. And we all kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, it might be a good idea to do this. And I thought, well, Project Unity, you know, in comparison to the New York Times is such a small drop in the ocean and my influence is, you know, nowhere near the same level. So I thought it would be a good idea to let them do this. But my prerequisite for them, you know, taking down the video for a short amount of time was that I got the first interview. So they were very quick to agree to that. And, you know, they honored that and allowed me to do the first interview with them, which I was, you know, really nervous about. But by the looks of the kind of the response I've got from the community who've seen it so far, it seems to be overwhelmingly positive, which, you know, has been just amazing for me. And I've had a huge kind of like spike in my traffic on the channel. So it's just been like a, you know, pretty profound moment for myself, being quite a small, you know, researcher in a small platform to suddenly get this opportunity. I'm really happy with that. I think they did really well. I do think the articles, although a lot of us pretty much know there could have been a lot more detail in them and maybe there could have been stuff about the Admiral Wilson leaks and, you know, perhaps we're going to see something like that further down the line. I think they still represent a really important kind of flag in the ground in regards to the narrative and especially the narrative unfolding in the, you know, like kind of the mainstream media and the public sphere, because, you know, crash retrievals might be normal to us in the community because we have a lot of information over, you know, a huge amount of decades from people such as yourself, Grant, and others in this chat. So we're, you know, within the community, we're kind of oversaturated a little bit. And so sometimes these things might not seem like such a huge deal, but I think that this has a huge, you know, amount of action potential behind it in regards to the crash retrievals now being a part of the discussion. You know, that's going to be eye-opening for a lot of people. And I think with things like the New York Times, it might not be fully educating people like us in the community, but I just feel like with things like this, we're looking more at the lawmakers, policymakers, congressmen, you know, people within the Senate, people within the Senate Intelligence Committee and stuff like that, who were suddenly realizing, oh, right, okay, this is actually a very serious discussion and they want to start getting things out of the, you know, the classified realm. So I think that although it's, you know, just one small step forward, I think it is a step forward, you know, so.
I want to ask a question. Usually I would just go to the next person, but I want to ask you, what kind of bump did you get in your channel after you did that article? And did you get the big phone call from Washington, an insider who's going to tell you what's going on?
The interview, I mean, I was used to having about 40 to 50 people in a live stream. And I think I had about 890 or 900 people. So I was like, oh my God. And there was loads of people like the New York Post, Stephen Greenstreet was in there commenting and people that were just never in my live stream. So I was freaking out and just having a bit of a moment to myself because it was already, you know, pre-recorded. So I was just sitting back and listening to it going like, oh my God, I can't believe so many people are in here. So that was huge. And I got like a, you know, my subscriber rate essentially doubled, you know, from about, I think, 2000 at that point to 4000. So it's been really cool for me. And recently I was lucky enough to go on the Richard Dolan show as well and have a chat with him, which was awesome. And that's given me a little bit more of a bump up. So it's, from the article and from the interviews, it's been quite a sufficient jump in my channel, which has been great. There was another part of your question. I forgot what it was. Sorry, what was it?
Did you get the big phone call?
No, I haven't got the big phone call.
Hey, Grant.
Maybe it's pending.
Let me interject here for a second since we're talking about subscribers. It's not, the feed isn't going to YouTube. Is that something, do you have it set to prove with Leslie and Ralph?
Please.
You did kind of get to throw the Wilson documents into your chat discussion a little bit. Will you tell me about that portion?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you went for it. So I was glad when I listened. I was like, oh, I did it. Yes.
Well,
so.
It was funny because obviously, like, for those that don't know, Leslie Kane, it was, I can't remember specifically what she was talking about, but she then led on to say that she believes that if there has been any reverse engineering programs, it was a very slow process with very little success. And the moment she said that, because I've been, like, you know, reading through the Admiral Wilson leaks, I knew exactly what that meant. I recognized those words straight away. And the thing is, she was trailing off on another discussion. So I was like, right, keep that in my head, keep it in. And luckily, I managed to remember it. And obviously, yeah, again, for those that don't know, I said to her, so can I just quickly ask you if your opinion on the rate of success regarding any sort of reverse engineering programs might have something to do with your, you know, interest and investigation into the Admiral Wilson documents. And, you know, there was a little bit of a silence and she, you know, no, and I think Leslie Kane's awesome and I get on with her well, but there was a little bit of a stutter and she kind of seemed like she didn't know what to say. And then she kind of said it. She wished she hadn't have said that and, you know, couldn't really comment. And so I you know, take from that what you will, but I think that's a clear indicator that they're still interested in that.
Right. It was a highlight for sure.
Yeah, you. No, for me as well. No, you're welcome. I was so happy when she said that. I was like, oh, I'm going to jump on that.
Who do you want to next, Nicole? Who do you want to go next?
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Well, let's have our new addition to the panel, Tom Whitmore. Come on down.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Tom.
And hi, Grant. Hi, everyone.
Beautiful. Thanks, Tom.
There's an awful lot of enthusiasm here, and there's been an awful lot of excitement in the UFO field the past couple of months, but I'm a little bit more pessimistic, and I feel that I'm realistic in that I've been involved actively in the UFO field since the 1990s, not nearly as long as Grant has and some other people have. But back in the 80s, 1989, Bill Moore published his confession, both in the MUFON Journal and at the MUFON Symposium in Las Vegas in 1989. And one of the things that he said was he had made contacts, some government-related contacts, and they were trying to bring information out into the public in a way that would not break any laws or break any security oaths. And a couple of days ago, we're having a conversation on this chat room in this group about the same subject. And we were looking at Hal Putoff's presentation, I think a couple of years back or 18 months back. And he said something very similar, that people were trying to bring information out into the public without breaking any laws. So this, if you look at the long term, we've had people and some consistent people like Hal Putoff who have been involved in this effort at least since the 1980s. That's 40 years. And we're just now getting to the point to where we have a little bit of information coming out. We have a couple of articles by the New York Times and a little bit of attention from mainstream media. And I think it's important to remember that the impetus for this from TTSA concerns military activities. Luis Elizondo and perhaps Chris Mellon are acutely aware that there have been very striking UFO incidents involving military activities, particularly in the Navy. And there apparently has been a culture in the military that you just don't report your UFO sighting if you know what's good for your career. And there's also this element, this idea that some of the top people in the military and the intelligence agencies are conservative Christians and they think it's demonic and they don't want to deal with this. So what I'm getting at is I think that the results that we have seen have been directly because of the efforts of Luis Elizondo and Chris Mellon, both working with DOD to try to create an acceptable channel of reporting for military people. And they've also been working behind the scenes in the Congress, and they're getting to the point where the Congress is setting things up to go on the record to expect regular reporting from the DOD level about UFO activities. And I just want to point that out because I don't see that as disclosure, but I do see it as an effort by Luis Elizondo, particularly, and Chris Mellon, to create a workable reporting channel for military incidents.
Can I quickly say something?
Yeah.
Yes.
I completely support that, by the way. But I just one thing that I've brought up as well a few times on my own platform is that although the government disclosure and dissemination is extremely important, and it does seem like there is, you know, albeit relatively a slow process, there is some form of ongoing process. I think that with the level of transparency we've got already coming out in the media and in the political sphere, it might be enough to promote more of a civilian effort. I mean, we've got things like Skyhub and you know, stuff like that that's starting to come out where we're trying to analyze data from UAPs on a civilian front. And so I think that, you know, although I agree with you, and I think that it's really necessary that we have a push towards government disclosure on a faster level, it may actually precipitate that if we, you know, it may increase the pace of a government disclosure if a furtherment of a civilian effort comes forward, you know. So maybe with the level of transparency we're starting to get, we can start to actually convince people outside of the UFO community, which is starting to happen even in academia. You know, Scientific America putting out their you know, intentions to start looking at this properly. So I think that we could maybe create more of a civilian effort going forward, and that could push the government to be more clear and more, you know, more precise.
I hope it does, and I want disclosure to happen.
Yeah. It has actually moved you out, Jade, hasn't it? You used to be a pretty secretive guy.
What, me?
Yeah. You were more secretive. Now you're sort of in the open. Yeah, even you have come sort of moved into the open.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, I mean, in terms of me coming out and making a platform and starting to become a voice in this, I guess really it's because I've had my own experiences that just, yeah, you know, for me personally, without a shadow of a doubt, make it clear that this is a real thing. So that was what made it, you know, gave me the urge to do this. But since then, yeah, I've got involved in all sorts, and it to me, it's more, you know, it's a research effort, but I do see it as an activism effort as well. You know, this is, we need to push the boundary, you know, more now and really put pressure on the government, but also start educating civilians and people in the population who aren't in the UFO community, because although it's growing, it's still a niche, you know, and we're still in some ways ostracized and put to the corner. And more people are coming out of the mainstream and starting to interact. So I think that it could only go further if we all put our effort in, you know, if we all start trying to do our thing.
Speaking of pressure on the government, maybe we should go to Steve Bassett. He's been doing the pressure on the government for 25 years, because Steve's been active.
Steve will have to unmute himself, but yeah, Grant, you're reading my mind. I was like, Steve and Joe, we need to hear from you two.
Can you hear me? Am I mic working?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, what's the question, Grant? Give me a question.
He was just talking about putting pressure on the government, and you've written a letter just recently, and you've been spending 25 years. I think that's your main focus, is to put pressure on the government. So I thought it should go to you next.
Let me recast the question. The situation right now is pretty complicated. I think the chess game is coming to an end. They call it the end game. And there's a limited number of pieces on the board. One of them is the executive branch. One is the Congress. Another is the Department of Defense. There's the general public. And then there are the very interested public, such as ourselves and our colleagues. There are hundreds and hundreds of those. And then there's the TTSA. These are the pieces that are on the board right now. And the trick is how to get the game over and win it. And of course, win it means disclosure. Putting pressure on the government is not really where it's at right now. It's almost about getting out of the way of what's going down. And that's going to be tough, because the level of interest and excitement is growing. It's going to get more intense, and people are going to start getting each other way and smacking elbows. I understand that. But right now, the To the Stars Academy group are leading the disclosure movement. Not me. I know some of my colleagues might disagree and go, No. But they are. And they've had an agenda since the day they were formed. And that agenda was delayed, disrupted by circumstances, political, certainly, and then the pandemic didn't help. But the agenda, I think, is now pretty clear to me. And that is that they launched with the intention of getting congressional hearings, because that's the way it has to go. There should be hearings, and then we can have disclosure shortly thereafter. That way it's less disruptive and appropriate. The Congress gets involved, and hundreds of millions of people will see lots of evidence that when the conclusion is reached, that, well, the evidence clearly shows there's an extraterrestrial presence, the public will be going, oh, okay, we sort of figured that out. That's the way the MIC, Military Intelligence Complex, wants it. And that's who Christopher Mellon is representing. And it's moving along, but it's moving along at a pace. You're getting an event about every 3 to 4 weeks. It's almost boom, boom, boom. And a lot of these things that are happening are essentially the rest of the military intelligence complex trying to catch up with the agenda that the TTSA launched in October 2017. When they launched that organization with its manifesto and with the people involved and making it clear that they were going to get serious into this issue, I can assure you that they hadn't taken a consensus of the entire military intelligence complex, sent them all emails and asked them what they thought. They support this, not support this. Are you on board? No, not at all. They had a group inside the Pentagon that backed them up, provided the basis for them to go forward. We don't know who that group is. We don't know how it went down. We do not know the origin story, and we're not going to know it until the TTSA is ready to tell us. So they launch, and a lot of people in the Navy and the Air Force and CIA and the DOD heard that this organization had launched, and maybe they didn't think much of it, but when the New York Times articles were printed, they definitely knew something was going down, and they were all caught, by and large, in a pretty awkward position. And so since then, you've had particularly the Navy trying to catch up. Eventually, the Congress starts to try to catch up. I think the Army jumped in there at one point, sort of let its presence be known. Catch up to what? Catch up to the disclosure project's finale. Now, the finale ends this way. Congressional hearings, multiple committees. The witnesses will be provided by Mellon and Elizondo. They've been gathering them for over a year and a half. I think DeLong alluded to something like 1,500 people had contacted the TTSA because of the show Unidentified with something to say. I'm pretty confident a majority of those people are military. So they have military witnesses lined up. Some of them are being put on the Unidentified show, little taste, right? Little hors d'oeuvre, but they've got more than that. And what counts is when they testify before the hearings. Now, in terms of the chess game, I'm pretty sure there's no one in the TTSA that thinks that congressional hearings on this subject are gonna happen this year. It's just not gonna happen. There's so many reasons for that. It can't happen until next year. And that's the plan. That's what they're aiming for. And so these little steps that are happening are, these are entities trying to get to the right place. So if things get going right after the inauguration, they are on board, they're on the record, they're part of the game. And these maneuvers, some of them are straightforward, some of them are complicated. Why do I call them maneuvers? When Norquist announced that we're starting up a program to investigate the phenomenon, when we learned that the ONI had a UAP task force, which was implied that it took over for the ATIP, I don't believe that for a second. All of this is, it's amusing in a way. The Navy and the DOD and other institutions, including our corporations, have been investigating the ET issue for 70 solid years. They have been investigating UAP cases for 70 solid years. They didn't stop with Blue Book. They didn't stop with Grudge or Sign. They've been going on the whole time in complete secrecy in USAPS. And so when they say we have a program, what they're saying is we've always had a private deep secret investigation going on, but now we're letting you know, well, we have a public thing going on. And so they're just trying to get on the record. What you are seeing with these maneuvers is public relations, pure and simple. You want to be seen in the best light. You want to be viewed in the best way. If a major historical event is going to go down, and if you can get some of the glory, piece of the action, that's good too. Now, I understand that the general public doesn't see that. Some of my colleagues see it, some don't. Right? But I look at this through a political perspective. I always have. I'm not interested in whether this particular piece is this way or that way. I'm interested in what is the larger agenda? Where are things going? Are we getting disclosure or not getting disclosure? And the signs that we are on the verge of the real deal, early January or February, early next year, are everywhere. Now, let me be clear. It's not a slam dunk. There's several ways this will go down November of this year. One way, Donald Trump is reelected and the Senate is held by the Republicans. Another way, Donald Trump is not reelected, but the Senate is held by the Republicans. Donald Trump loses and the Democrats take the House and the Senate, which is what the polls are showing now. Each one of these situations is very different from the other. And Mellon will have to decide, once all that is settled, move for hearings or wait. We'll see. The optimal thing for Mellon is a Democrat House, Senate, and Biden's president, without question. I can go into that further, but let me move on very quickly and finish. All right. Why early next year? All right. There is a powerful political logic to this. First, if you're going to initiate hearings that are going to be seen by hundreds of millions of people on the most significant and controversial issue in the world, multiple hearings, You don't want to wait until the new administration is starting to have to deal with this crisis and that crisis and this partisan flare up and this scandal, that whatever. You don't want that. You want to get them done and out of the way before that starts. And most importantly, assuming a Democratic victory, Joe Biden is going to walk into a crisis as big, if not bigger, than what FDR walked into when he was elected president of the United States. It will be an absolute, I don't know how to describe it, shit show. This is not TV, shit show. So you're talking possibly as many as $38 trillion in debt. You're talking 400,000 to 500,000 deaths. You're talking in excess of 100 million Americans having been or still infected with COVID. That's the confirmed cases plus the unconfirmed cases, but still infections, running roughly around 10 to 1. A massive, still unemployment, chaos, right after the flu season.
Steve, let me jump in on you real quick.
I was almost
so there. I know you just said that you believe that this push is going to shed some light and give us disclosure, and that it's not going to happen till after the first of the year.
Right. I think in disclosure, yeah.
In the last panel, I think Bob McGuire, you brought it up that 180 days for Marco Rubio's inquisition would put us around February, if I'm remembering correctly. So, Steve, in your quick opinion, what do you think we might see from that 180 days, or what do you think this next wave of disclosure will look like?
Well, the next wave of disclosure is congressional hearings with witnesses, military witnesses, one after another, primarily on the basis of
right. But threat. We've seen that before, though. We've seen that before. What's going to be
when
different?
When have we seen that before?
I'm thinking back, even well, I guess I'm saying we've seen these commissions, these Senate committees go nowhere. Like where are we going to see this once we drag everybody up there? I mean, Greer drug a bunch of military people up and had them tell their story, and
that's completely unofficial. That's
totally different.
That was completely unofficial.
No, right. So this official version, what's going to be the difference, though?
There hasn't been a congressional hearing on this subject since 1968. My citizen hearing on disclosure doesn't count. That was a mock congressional hearing. All right.
Right.
So what?
That mock version. So was that a practice round? Like, what should we expect from that hearing since it's before the Senate? I guess my question is, what should we expect?
What we will not only expect but see are military witnesses of all stripes, stations, similar to the ones you're seeing on the unidentified show, but I imagine there's going to be some even stronger witnesses, more powerful, higher level, testifying in front of multiple committees, Senate and House Intelligence, Senate and House Armed Service, and so forth. There's number of others. They're all going to want to jump in. Every committee, the Agricultural Committee, will want to have a hearing. I assure you, believe me, nothing makes the juices flow at a member of Congress than 100 million people watching a hearing that they're involved in. And they'll be testifying under oath, not on unidentified.
Right.
On under oath to Congress, on camera, to an audience. And what will happen is that amount of evidence, the amount of evidence that will be presented will quickly add up. I don't think it'll take more than about 2 weeks unless they drag it out. And it will then be possible for the congressional leaders, the appropriate people in the White House and the DOD to come together and reach a simple conclusion. Now we can say comfortably without too many public relations problems that based upon the evidence just presented under oath, it's quite clear that the extraterrestrial presence has been confirmed, and I, the President of the United States, confirm as well. Right? We are not alone. This is the way to go. It will be cast in a threat context because national security is the way you're going to get these hearings done. It's the way you're going to get these committees to sign on. You can't go to the committee chairs and say, we need to hold committees on how we're going to welcome the extraterrestrials, right? What kind of party are we going to throw? And so you've got to approach them on a national security basis. But the last point I want to make, and this is really key. The Democrats are going to be the ones controlling the House and Senate. They will be the committee chairs that run these committees. Most of the glory is going to them, and they have their president in the White House. And that president is facing the most difficult situation any president has seen since FDR, might even be worse than that, many times more severe than what a Barack Obama faced in 2008-09. So you hold hearings on the extraterrestrial presence, you bring in the witnesses, testimony is overwhelming, and Joe Biden confirms and announces the extraterrestrial presence to the world. He is the disclosure president. In that instance, he is given a huge amount of political capital that he can then use to address these problems, meaning he becomes a political bulldozer. He's FDR. Anything he wants, he can get, and they're going to need that kind of political power. And so you want those hearings right away. And if you look at things that are happening, it's clear they're on a pace. They have two concerns that if they would call me up, and I assure you they're not going to, that I would mention to them. If they get too far out ahead of their skis, they might create a situation that trips this president to flip the switch. Not by holding hearings, it would take about four tweets as an effort to distract him and possibly help in the election. I don't think that'll happen, but it could happen. We've already seen the president bumped four times on this issue. The last one was the most concerning because it was bizarre. His economic advisor, Lou Dobbs, out of nowhere, asked him about the UFO issue, like his son did. And the president says to Lou Dobbs, I don't really know much about it. You're the expert, Lou.
Right.
I'll do what you want. When I heard that, I had a migraine instantly. And so that's one problem. They have one other problem that's even worse. There's somebody out there that doesn't like us. It's been playing us like a fiddle, driving us nuts. for 4 years minimum, if not longer. And so since those hearings are going to take some time to manifest, that man could go, oh, too bad. And I'm talking about Vladimir Putin. So before those hearings,
all right, let's not get into the Russian side of this discussion yet.
Pulls it out from under. And this is a serious issue.
But I'll tell you,
if he did, I would be fine with that. We have disclosure. Biden confirms. Nobody likes Putin. Most people go, yeah, well, Putin's just trying to mess with you. Joe, you're the man. So he'll get plenty of capital from that. The Democratic Congress will get capital. Even the Republicans will get some. And the U.S. will move forward with a disclosure president that I think can manage this issue. So it's not the worst thing that could happen. But if I'm the boys that are managing this, playing this chess game, I wouldn't dawdle. I wouldn't be sitting around going, well, no hurry. You know, inauguration's over. Let's take a vacation for a couple of weeks, see what's going on. Don't do that. Because Putin, it would be a massive embarrassment to us, huge boon to him. And is there anything that's happened in the last 4 years that doesn't that would dissuade someone from thinking that Putin would never dare embarrass the United States by that action?
I'm going to toss out this question in lieu of what citizens can be doing between now and disclosure. And Dr. Joe Buckman, why don't you weigh in here and tell us your thoughts and maybe tell us how an average citizen can speak to their local politicians and rally them for disclosure?
I don't know.
truth, finally, truth. I mean,
and the reason I say that is campaigning between now and November 3rd in a pandemic is different. Right. Yeah, what I was saying 4 years ago or when I ran in 2008, you know, you go to the town halls and there's a microphone and there's your member of Congress and there's staff and you can get their attention. And I don't think emails are as effective. We talked about this last time. I doubt there's any in-person events happening for most of the people running for office, both the incumbents, and then you've got another set of challengers that doubles that number of potential people you can interact with beyond the 535 to probably around 1,000. There's some people maybe running without much competition.
Not hearing.
Certainly talk to them. You can't hear me?
Yeah, take the mic up.
Quiet. If you can turn your volume up a little bit, I think you'll be
all right. I'll move a little closer to the mic.
I can hear him just fine.
Of course,
other people
can hear me fine. You all turn your volume up. Let's take a vote. Show of hands. How many think the volume's good? How many? Oh, there's an example of how you can do this in a Zoom meeting with your candidate on the other side of the Zoom as opposed to Grant Cameron. What I did go do, though, was get my July 29th, 1968 copy of the congressional hearings from the government printing office of the last time we actually had official hearings. And, you know, Steve thinks the citizens hearing doesn't count for much, but, you know, Steve wasn't really there. He didn't see it. So he was out in the hallway. They were fantastic. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Bassett. How much of the citizens hearing have you actually read the transcript of or watched? It was an amazing event. I know he was out doing other things that actually made it happen. I'm not trying to be in any way diminishing of your role in making that happen, because you know you have my lifetime gratitude for that. But I think, you know, this thing's an interesting, I bet the copies of this are going to be going on sale. Get them now while they're still out there on eBay, like I did. So I think you can point to that and say, hey, look, you know, you guys have done this before, and gee, it was 1968, maybe it's time again. I wanted to address another point made earlier. Yeah, you know, when you go back and look at Condon and Grudge and Blue Book and all of that, and there were people saying extraordinary things. And the fear is that maybe this is going to turn into something where we're all really disappointed a year from now or 2 years from now. And it's like, yeah, once again, the ball seemed to be moving and it didn't go anywhere. I think there's a big difference. I don't believe in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s that you had what I'm looking at here on my other monitor, the press release that was posted 4 hours and a few minutes ago on defense.gov, our official government website, Establishment of Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force. Exactly. I suppose they put out releases about Blue Book and other things, but this is extraordinary. I have a former student from when I taught at Indiana University who writes for Task and Purpose, kind of an insider military newspaper. He used to write for Stars and Stripes. I guess this is in that. There's a bunch of those out there. Who sent me the press release, and I sent it out to the group apparently about an hour after Danny did, not scrolling back up and seeing that it already happened. But I was blown away. I'm like, here's a reporter for Task and Purpose who's sending me a link to defense.gov about the establishment within the Department of Navy of this UAPTF now. UAPTF, you know. And I also think that that's what's happening here is intended to make it appear as if UAPs are the new thing, and to completely dismiss this 70-year history of government involvement in research of UFOs and kill the UFO term and not open that Pandora's box of what was covered up and hidden.
You know, Nimitz being the new Roswell.
Yeah. So it's like they're doing it a second time. I mean, there was the Roswell Daily Record came out with disclosure. Steve, it happened. It's there. It's in the newspaper. Flying disc recovered. That disclosure only lasted, what was it, a few hours at most. And then years of stupidity with things like weather balloons and swamp gas and absurdities. I'm looking at this now and I realize I'm inside the bubble and maybe I'm a little too optimistic. I don't see how they can take what's occurred over the last couple of months. You know, especially with your analysis with Mr. X going through names and dates and people who could be subpoenaed and brought before committees that apparently know that you can cover this up with a, 2021 version of a weather balloon. It seems to me like the cat's really out of the
Project
bag.
Mogul Mark II.
Yeah. I don't
know, but we are seeing a level of debunking with the Nimitz videos where
people but you don't need to pay attention to those clowns. You don't need to pay attention to those clowns. I mean, we have so much data from those things. It's not just the eyewitness, though, is it? It's not just eyes on. The radar data. You have the Aegis radar. I'm sorry. I get passionate about that.
I do, too. But it is misleading for the general public when they hear this sort of, debunking talk going on where they, they'll get a clear gun camera expert to say, oh no, it's just an inverse of the gimbal inside the camera. And then people like my father's age who have been through Project Blue Book and the Condon report just go, oh, yep, there's the explanation done. So, I mean, no minds are being changed by that. So,
but that's also the ignorance of the way that mainstream media has been covering this topic as well. And, when you look at the way that they have handled this, they have only been handling this on a press release fashion. And I think from a media point of view, we all need to be concerned that it's the exact same people on every interview that are being interviewed. We don't see people like Grant or Joseph or James or Danny or anybody from this panel or other panels being interviewed on this subject. People who have spent 10, 20, 30, 40 years looking into this subject from a civilian level. We see the same five people each and every time. If that doesn't say to anybody researching this field that they are trying to control a narrative within the mainstream media on this topic, we're all worse off for it.
Well, Dave, what were your thoughts on President Trump calling Lou Dobbs the official?
I thought it was hilarious because, the one thing, whether or not you like Donald Trump, that's irrelevant. But when it comes to this subject, okay, we have to be able to take a real serious look that he is standing in the one of the most powerful seats on this planet, and he is talking UFOs publicly. Mm-hmm. Rarely have we seen that. Sure, we've seen it with President Obama on Jimmy Kimmel. Sure, we've seen the odd question thrown at others, but no president has, in my opinion, has taken as many questions about the UFO subject as President Trump. And on that note, we have to know that we, and I agree with Steve Bassett on this, we are getting closer to it because it's becoming a topic of relevance and not one that we just shove under the table. The difference being is, from a media standpoint, the media still hasn't jumped on the mainstream cause of this. They haven't gone down the road of the history. They're only going by what they have been presented on this subject, which is the same 5-6 people each interview with the same quotes and little green men running around when quotes get retracted.
Could I just make a real quick point? And I agree with you in regards to the fact that it's basically the same 5 people on mainstream media. And even though it's like 100% necessary, we have more people on mainstream media. One thing I'd say is, you know, the ratings for something like CNN or Fox or, you know, NBC or, you know, even my own country's, you know, mainstream media platforms kind of pale in comparison to some of the podcasts that we have online now. Things like the Joe Rogan Experience, which kind of like brings in about 6 to 8 to even 10 million views, you know, within a few weeks, is it literally no news station can brag those types of ratings. So I think right. Even though I agree with you, we're definitely seeing, you know, we had Jeremy Corbell was on the Joe Rogan Experience, with David Fravor was on there. We've had people on kind of like very widely distributed networks that, you know, it's not mainstream media and it's important that we have that. But a huge audience is being reached by those people. And they're not all UFO people, you know, like podcasts right. like that cover yeah, a very I wide agree. Range.
That is sort of the problem I think Dave is trying to convey, though. When we do have our shot at mainstream media, we get people like Lou Dobbs or
right.
or we get the president's son, who may not necessarily be asking the type of questions that we in the community would ask. And even Joe Rogan, for that matter. I'm going to bust up a little bit. Here he has an experiencer talking about his UFO sightings for the first time on his show, and he didn't even ask any good questions. He just kind of let it roll.
I was talking about the guest. The host.
But James is right. James is right when it comes to the fact that people are looking for alternative streams, okay, which is why a show like mine on Spaced Out Radio is so important now. This is why it's important to bring on those different level of voices. The problem that we have here, whether it's Joe Rogan, whether it's mainstream media, I mean, Joe Rogan is as close to mainstream media as we can get, but I don't see Grant's phone or Richard Dolan's phone ringing off the hook for Joe Rogan. And, you know, and I'm not crapping on the guys who are, or the people who are being interviewed, but I don't know about any of you or anybody who will listen to this, but I'm tired of hearing about Fravor. I'm tired of hearing Elizondo. As much as I think Elizondo is the most powerful man in ufology and probably the smartest on this subject, I'm tired of hearing about from Chris Mellon and Harry Reid and Nick Pope. What have they done to generate a lot of the discussion? They brought a lot out, but we need differing opinions. This is where it's so important for people like Richard Dolan and Grant Cameron and Bob McGuire and Melinda Leslie and Lorian Fenton and Linda Moulton Howe and all of these people who have been around the game for eons. They need to be shown that same respect because they can come at this from a different angle. And every day we go down this same path, we see how the media on the mainstream struggles with this topic, because if they did any research into this whatsoever, which, as we all know, is the second biggest story in humankind's history next to Jesus Christ himself coming down from the heavens, okay, they would know that there are some brilliant minds in this field that are ready to speak, ready to talk, full of information, but they're not going down that road. And it's unfortunate.
Dave, can everyone hear me? Dave?
Yeah.
They don't know.
Go ahead, Melinda.
Okay. Can you guys hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Volume's good because I can move the mic. Okay. Dave, they don't know we exist at all. Okay.
But
what they know is what's being presented to them by the sources presenting it to them. So they're going directly to those sources. I understand that. That's it. We don't exist with that kind of presence for them to even have a reason to go to us.
Okay. So when I was a reporter, if I was digging into a story and I wanted to find out more about it, I'm going down the road of trying to figure out who can I talk to? Who is not talking about this? And if it is the same people talking over and over again, where else is there a different opinion? That's a reporter's job, is to find
out.
They're
not investigating
opinion.
This story. They're just covering
that.
The
that's
press
the point I'm making.
Given to
well,
them.
Here,
that's all.
Maybe
do we
we're
think
the
there's
of
no
it.
Investigation?
Do we well, think they're not?
In 2016, Steve Bassett was quoted in the New York Times about the Rockefeller Initiative and Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely.
So if you go Google search for people that you know are in the mainstream media, Steve was also on Fox News, I think back in the 2008.
Well, guys, do we think this issue?
If we focus from 2017 on, if we focus on 2017, Steve Bassett, in my opinion, should be right front and center of all of this. This is a man who has literally given away his last 25, 30 years because he believes so much in this subject.
And he's live from the National Press Club right now. But I have a quick question for Steve, if you could indulge me. Out of all the scenarios about who gets elected and the House and the Senate and what's likely to play out there, I think there's no chance the Republicans take the House, so we can throw that off the table. There are 78 days. Between election day and hopefully we'll know the results of that election within a day or two, or who knows. What about the scenario where Donald Trump is not reelected, and what does he do between then and January 20th? It seems like that's a real risk for grabbing his claim to fame before he's removed by the military from the White House so they can move in.
Yeah, I have several points. One, I'm not too worried about the transition. It's about seven.
No,
Congress takes over January 3. So essentially it's 60 days, not 61 days from the election to the Congress convening. It will be a Democratic Congress. Once the election is over, Trump's power is gone. And so if he tried to make a maneuver like that or on anything, frankly, no one is going to pay attention and no one's going to cooperate. So I'm not too concerned. I'm more concerned about something before the election as a maneuver, desperation maneuver, to try to distract people to maybe get elected. So I'm not too concerned about the transition. However, let me assuage some of Dave's pain. All right. Look, when the TTSA was announced, I kind of knew what was going down. And I knew that they were not going to be giving us lots of calls inviting us out to Encinitas to meet with Tom and break bread. No, it's not going to happen. The reason is...
I've been invited. Lots of people have been invited.
Some people have been invited, but not many. And in terms of a public acknowledgement or referring to us in front of the camera, again, it's been as little as it could be. And the reason was this. The agenda was to get congressional hearings. Right. Bring the issue up, elevate it, get hearings, get disclosure, and end this thing, which obviously some people inside the Pentagon want to see ended, the truth embargo. Now, in order to do that, they needed to keep it well-defined, simple, and all of the previous history and all the people involved, we're kind of a problem.
Right.
Because we have all this baggage, right? And we have all the questions to ask that they can't really ask right now. And so they knew that the Congress doesn't want to hear, oh, Elizondo is part of this program and he's pulling stuff together and he wants you to talk to Steve Bassett. I assure you, that's not what they want. We were a problem to them. It doesn't mean that they disdain us. It doesn't mean they are not aware of us. But for what they had to do, they needed to stay within certain lines in order to get it done. Now, with that in mind, I'm working behind the scenes on another approach. In other words, I'm working to try to get as many of the researchers and my colleagues to start preparing to position themselves when disclosure does come. In other words, we've got about 7 months to do
so
what
I think what we're trying to say is, it, in a pop culture way, what we're seeing is a reboot. Or like a 2.0. They don't want to waste their time with you guys who have been digging into it for 30, 40 years. They just want the modern, what's going to get the youngest age bracket, what's going to get the
Yeah, biggest
Nicole. People involved for the longest amount of time. So,
Danny, what'd you get invited to? Real quick, everyone, I'm getting messages from people. We are not live right now. Is that Will?
Yeah, I was going to try and interject and say the same thing. We're not live.
Yeah, I'm hearing from a lot of people who are like really disappointed because they're all trying to watch.
It's recording, so I guess it'll share when we're.
What will be the delay on them seeing it?
Probably.
Yeah, we addressed that at the beginning.
Until the end, until we're in and it closes. Then YouTube processes it, and then it's out.
Yeah, we'll put it up right away.
Okay.
There's a lot of assumptions going on about TTSA, though. You really get to talk to them, and I think a lot of people would get a different idea of how they're going about things. They care about the community. They're reaching out to people, and they care about everyone. Of course, the public is their... is their main goal, and the politicians are their main goal, but they're not, you know, giving a cold shoulder to anybody here.
Well, not everyone does get to talk to them, though.
Oh, I'm not coming at this from a TTSA level, Danny. I'm not coming at this from a TTSA level at all. The point that I'm coming at as someone who has experience in mainstream media is the fact that the media has not done the public any favors outside of the press releases and what they've been handing it. It's all been softball journalism on this subject where nobody has outside of Blumenthal and Keene, okay, have done anything in depth on this subject.
Dave, I have to disagree with you strongly here.
Sure.
One of the principal things I do is track media and stuff. As I've mentioned many times, on my website, there's a print media archive. There have been, last I counted, 675 articles written about the TTSA and the Nimitz case and other related matters that basically spring from the TTSA. 675. There are a number of reporters that are writing very good stuff. MJ Banias, Tom Rogan, and others. The Drive is doing extraordinary work. There's plenty of journalistic coverage.
Well, okay,
Tim, one second here, Steve.
Okay, when you're still looking at fringe media, when I'm talking mainstream media, I'm talking the television networks, I'm talking the mainstream newspapers that people pick up on their daily basis from the corners or read online. If I pick up the Vancouver Province here where I am in British Columbia, there is nothing on UFOs. Okay,
hey, go to my site and look at the articles.
I understand that they're covering it, okay, but they're not going in depth with the subject, okay?
We're at the beginning stage. We're at the introductory stage to this. It's only just entering the mainstream level. We're at the start of this process.
We're in the beginning. I agree with what Jay just said there. We're in the beginning.
We're in the beginning of mainstream media, paying attention to the streets. If you knew how the mainstream media worked, you guys wouldn't be saying this. And maybe that sounds a little cocky and brash, but it's the truth.
Look, I know it's not easy to sit on the sidelines when you've been playing the game for three quarters, and now you're off the field. Whatever, if there's somebody else in there, and they're going to score the winning touchdown, it's not easy. You're on the team, but nobody really is paying attention to you. They're paying attention to the 11 guys on the field that are about to take it over the goal line, win the game, and get the glory. It's not easy. But we have a very well-archived history on this. That's one of the beauties of the internet. Thank God for it. And that's going to be there when disclosure takes place. And so what I'm suggesting is what we need to do is concentrate on what can we do in the next 7 months among ourselves. How can we cross-support each other to prepare ourselves to be out there after disclosure. After disclosure, you're going to have hundreds of millions of people wanting to talk to everybody. So there won't be a problem there, but the problem will be that a host of individuals who never even written on the subject will suddenly jump up and say, I'm an expert. You'll have debunking scientists like Tyson and others that'll say, oh, I've always believed in extraterrestrials. Talk to me. And so there's going to be a lot of massive competition. So we have got to get serious and professional about how we're going to prepare ourselves so that we can quickly get out there, right? And I'm working with a lot of people to do that. And I think it's going to be hopefully useful.
Would it be all right if I just made a quick point? I just wanted to say, you know, obviously I'm a younger person in this. I've literally been in this for only a few years, and I would never claim to have the background knowledge you guys have got. But I also think that, you know, just from a perspective of someone coming into this quite recently, the mainstream media attention, although, again, it's not the level that we want, and like some of us were saying, it's not coming out in local newspapers and such, I do think that this is the, you know, not the beginning, because we've been in a long process, but the destigmatization of this is now starting to happen at a faster rate, and it is still a process. And although, you know, for many people who have been doing this for decades, it's going to look like it's still happening at a very slow rate, I think that the pace has increased. And when you're looking at local news reporting on this and all of the different mainstream media articles, like, you know, potentially coming out from other platforms that haven't reported on this yet. And as a UK citizen, none of my mainstream media is reporting on this, guys, by the way. And I don't know if you're aware of that, but there is no BBC, there is no Sky News, there is no ITV Channel 4. No one's talking about it. So over here, it's a complete vacuum. You know, so I think that we are definitely in this process. It's going to take a little bit more time, but if this maintains in regards to the political dissemination that's starting to happen and the mainstream coverage, it will start to give people permission. People are still needing permission. There's a huge stigma attached to this, as we all know. And I think that we're still seeing the very gradual, you know, dissolving of that stigma. Maybe we still have to be a bit more patient with how this is going to roll out.
Okay, let me answer that with this question, James. Last year, when the Pentagon came out and said that, yes, they had been investigating UFOs for decades, we all remember when that happened, correct?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Not a single reporter asked, what about Roswell?
That's because they're not, you know, mainstream media reporters.
That's exactly what I'm saying is, when you are a reporter and you are covering something that you do not understand, or you don't want to be. Okay, I'll give you an example. I was a sports reporter. I hated covering soccer. You might as well have thrown me to the wolves. It would have been a much easier process than going to sleep for 2 hours in a press box. Okay? and I had to make something out of that. So what do? I go into the dressing room after the soccer match with the Vancouver Whitecaps and whoever, and I ask three basic questions. What did you think of your team's effort? How do you improve for next game? That was a nice one-goal effort that you had. I get my audio, I ask that to three players, and then I leave. It's called softball journalism because I don't want to be there or I don't understand the topic. That's what we are seeing right now from mainstream.
I agree with you.
They are not prepared for this topic. And when you have someone, okay, with like, and TTSA has done a great job. Okay. And let me just finish here for a second. TTSA has done a great job in bringing this to the mainstream. We cannot take that away from them. And trust me, I've been a staunch critic of a lot of things that they have done, but I will give them credit where credit is due. They have brought this topic to the forefront. But what they have done is they've said, look, we'll give you everybody you need. Okay, which has made these reporters who have covered this subject, so-called in-depth, lazy in researching the subject and the history that goes along with proper reporting.
What's the solve to it? Because unless we, and I'm not trying to make an argument,
I agree,
but unless we tear down the structure that is completely, you know, disseminating the mainstream media, unless we tear that down and we
it's not about
people.
Tearing it down, it's about journalists doing their job.
Well,
which is
how do we convince them to do their
they've
job?
They've never done their job on this subject.
Melinda. That's what I'm saying is this is why I have said, and I hate to sound like a broken record, okay, but this is why I just gave the example of when you cover something that you don't know or don't understand, you look to get in and out as quickly as possible and get it either into the paper, on the internet, or on television or radio. That's the way it works.
I don't think anyone's disagreeing with you on that point. I think my only question was what's the solution to that then? Because we are dealing with that, no doubt. But then how do we get more credible people into these outlets?
The solution comes from the reporters and the editors who have to start taking this subject a little bit more seriously in regards to saying, hey, where does this go?
I would agree with that.
Can I jump in here? Because I've done interviews for 40 years, This has always been a story that the media, this is the last story they want to cover. Nobody wants to be the crazy UFO guy that's got to
exactly.
So they've always avoided the subject. I think it's up to us. I don't think we're any different than any other social or political movement. You have childhood cancer as an issue. It's not getting any oxygen right today either. This story is being killed by Donald Trump. I mean, there's nothing but Donald Trump on media. And unless you've got a totally exclusive story, and George Knapp always brought up the fact that this is a steep learning curve, that you cannot come in and do a UFO story unless you've done a lot of work. And the vast majority of media people, it's like today we're doing this story, tomorrow we're doing a story on dogs, and then we're doing this story, and you don't have 2 years to learn all the insides and outsides of this sort of thing. So I think it's up to us to push the story and to give it to the media, because they're basically just doing their 24-hour story. They've got to do this story, that story. They really don't care about the story. It's always been like Deborah Orrin talked about when she asked the question of Webster Hubble in 1997, when Hubble said he'd been sent out by Bill Clinton to look at UFOs. She asked the question, and then she said, the guy walked around with the press secretary, and then she said, I asked them, is it true what Mr. Hubble writes in his book? And the guy said, we're not going to comment on what people put in their private books. And she said, I stood there and I waited for someone to follow up, and they all rolled over and played dead. And that's
absolutely
nobody wants to go all the way to the White House and struggle your way and get up there and then ask the stupid UFO question. It's the toxic story nobody wants to touch.
Let me follow up on that. I've given 1,300 interviews. I think I've had about 550 articles in print media about my work over 20 years. Not too bad, all right? But let me tell you a little story. First of all, major stories to break out have to hit a critical mass. It's always that way. You can go out and murder somebody, and it may be nothing more than a police report, little local article. Murder 50 people, they'll make a documentary about you. So let's look at the 1915-16 election, those 2 years of the campaign. During that period, I was working out of Washington to get the ET connection to Clinton into the news. And eventually I had 42 reporters I was in a direct relationship with, not just a casual email, but there's regular updates going out to him. One of those was Ralph Blumenthal. I tried very hard to get Ralph to dig into this. He couldn't do it. He gave me a couple of reasons. All right, but I was talking to him. Also, the science guy, the Pulitzer Prize winner, what's his name? Can't remember. Broad, board, whatever. Over 500 articles were written about the Clinton ET connection. So many articles that she had to go on Kimmel. Podesta had to go on shows. Her husband went on Kimmel. He went on Colbert. They had to tweet about it. They were being forced to it. And each article generated, or each rather,
oh, Steve from froze up.
People generated more.
He's
more
still all right on my one.
Okay.
So can I change the subject totally?
Yeah, actually,
we should be talking about the UAPTF. It's like the biggest story since ATIP.
And, all right, Danny, take it away. Take it away.
Boom.
Let's talk about it. And then after Melinda, Melinda's going to give us a Jim Semivan update. So let's hear from Danny Silva from the Silver Record.
The UAPTF story is massive. It's as almost as big as 2017. And it broke today. Well,
bigger.
A big new piece of it broke today. And, you know, I've been able to confirm now that they've been funded. The program has been stood up. I said this on the last panel that UAPTF is the continuation of ATIP. This is a huge deal. You know, what Lou Elizondo did, he had to leave the program to get them more attention. And that's worked now. So he put everything on the line to do this. And what TTSA has set out to do, it's worked. Him and Chris Mellon, that's all worked. And that's why they're getting interviewed the most, because, you know, Elizondo and Mellon are doing the most. But this is just, it's a really big deal. Not only that, it's in the intelligence bill, like we talked about last time. So this is huge. I mean, if we want the media to be involved, this is what's going to get them involved. I'm expecting a huge media push. It's already getting picked up on ABC and lots of different channels and different avenues just today. And it just broke, like somebody said, 4 hours ago. So this is a really, really big deal. And not only when when the Times article first came out in 2017, it was misreported. It was reported two ways. One, that the program ended in 2012. Well, then they followed up with the Elizondo quote that the ATIP was still going. But a lot of major mass media reported that it ended in 2012. I think the public was able to kind of put that in a box and say, oh, well, they had a program, but it's gone. But the thing is, now they can't do that. There's an ongoing program. I told Richard Dolan when he interviewed me, I just want to shake the public now and tell him there's an ongoing task force currently going on in America. This is a really, really big deal. They can't hide it anymore. It's not in the past. What? It's currently happening.
And they're not hiding it. It's on defense.gov and went up on at 4:13 time on a Friday, which is almost right out of Dolan's after disclosure book. Late on a Friday, up on defense.gov, establish, I'm looking at here on my other screen, establishment of an unidentified aerial phenomenon task force, August 14th, 2020.
Which isn't 100% accurate.
Come back and look at that as another date that may go down in history.
They're kind of spinning it a little bit because this is ATIP. And before ATIP, there was another ATIP. So, yeah, they are spinning it a little
but
bit.
But they weren't up on defense.gov as a press release, right?
And I'd like to add, this is, again, pointing towards the de-stigma.
Yeah, this is getting de-stigmatized.
Yeah.
When Marco Rubio was saying he'd rather have it be aliens than have it be Russia, I mean, this is a huge deal. We have Mark Warner. We have both sides of government.
When do people think that we're going to get off the Russian Chinese?
Out of this totally.
I think we need to remember that this is a military effort. This is not a general public civilian UFO disclosure movement.
Right.
They've made some progress in getting the military to be able to have a reporting channel.
I mean, MUFON was supposed to be that, and a part of me thinks like we're all wasting our time looking at the government. We should just only be looking at the phenomenon. The thing about that is the general public looks to the government for disclosure. So when we talk about it, the general public doesn't listen to us. It has to come through the government in these major channels. And unfortunately, we're kind of stuck with that. But that's
a good
why
point.
It's such a big deal that the task force is here. It's open. I keep saying I hope that some of the leaders of the task force come out and do a press conference. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but eventually that might be on the table. This is a really, really big story. It's not going to stop. Once the bill gets passed, they have 180 days. The clock is on. The heat is on their butts, and they got to do this, and they got to turn in the report. Somebody said it. You know, it's not a slam dunk. Maybe they're going to phone it in. Maybe they're going to say it's classified and they can't. But I don't know why they would have done this in the first place. Another point I brought up in the last panel is that they're the UAPTF, and which is ATIP, they're kind of at war with some of these SAPs, and they're trying to get this really secret stuff out to be just kind of secret. You know, it's not a special access program, UAPTF. It's for the public in a way.
How do you know that? Can I just ask how you know that? Because if that's true, that's fantastic news that they're trying to dislodge, unacknowledged SAPs and things like that.
Ask Melinda. She talked to Jim Semivan.
I know that. I get it from Jim.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
I get it from other places.
I think both of you should tell us where you get your information on that topic.
Jim Semivan. I'm happy.
I don't name drop who I talk to, but
you don't have to name drop. I'm just saying, what have you been told in regards to dislodging information from unacknowledged or SAPs? Or, that's pretty major.
Yeah, I think it is major too, and I think it's been, if you read between the lines of a lot of the TTSA stuff, they're trying to get these secrets out. You can read Tom's tweets. It's kind of in between the lines, but this is what I'm reporting.
Let's hear from Melinda who talked.
Hang on. I want Danny to feel like he said everything he wanted. And Dan, right before all this, you had said something about that you had gotten information from George Knapp, and I was curious what he was saying about it. So I want you to feel like you finished, and I also want to hear what Knapp had to say about all this.
What I was talking about George Knapp is he was the first one to report the press release, and then everyone jumped on it. I think Mystery Wire and George Knapp had it first. But I just want everyone to be really excited about this. And it's really, really positive. I know we've been burned and people have been burned over the last decades, but nothing has been like the last 3 years. And it's just really
agreed.
Great. I think we should all be excited right now. And this UAPTF thing and the bill, the intelligence bill, and everything else that's coming out.
Joe Buckman's right. No press announcement has ever been like this press announcement that went up on defense.gov. This is just completely different.
it's great movement. It's amazing. Everything that's happening is amazing. To the Stars has worked, everything they've done. And we should all be happy. And it is a team effort. I think Steve made a really great analogy when he was talking about in the last quarter of the football game, when maybe not everybody is in, but it is a whole team effort. You know, of course, we're not doing as much as maybe TTSA, but everyone else is doing this. And what y'all and what me, what all of us have spent our lives, dedicated our lives to doing, obviously me and Jay and some others, not as long as the rest of y'all, but it hasn't been for nothing. And you guys have all been correct. And it's amazing. So let's all be happy about this stuff. And I know we could be pessimistic about the government, but we should be really happy about what's going on. Yeah. Thank you, Melinda.
I agree completely with what Danny got, Sarah,
Melissa, come on. What's Jimmy Simonsan got for us?
Okay. Hold your horses. Chillax, man. Okay. No. Okay. So I specifically called him with a couple of questions. So that was the main thing that was my interest. So that I would have an update for you guys. And we kind of played a little phone tag, and he finally got back to me just today, just literally just a couple hours before this. And I specifically said, when is the house? And this was before I knew about the press release we were just talking about. I saw that after getting off the phone with him, and I'll tell you why I don't think that he necessarily had seen it yet himself. But anyways, going back to, I asked him, when is the House voting? Because we know it went to the House desk, the bill that had passed the Senate, that included the, you know, sections on UAP. And he went on to say, we kind of went back and forth about it, but basically there's not an exact thing, and he hasn't been told for sure, but he said it should be absolutely before the end of September. And he actually thought it would be either like the last week of August or the first week of September. So that's what he was saying. And maybe Bob, you know more about that, but that's what he was telling me. So he said, if not the end of this month, very beginning of September, I expect that to be voted.
Then we got to get Trump to sign it. Now I'm really worried about that.
No. This is the whole intelligence bill thing. He'll sign it.
Trump has to sign it, and he has to not hold it up or blackmail people. Trump needs to sign this for it to be the deal.
Yeah, but it's not just the UAP issues in there. It's, you know, it's all a 20-page thing.
It's the entire defense authorization.
I think and the report that we all saw, I understand, is not the actual bill. That's just a report on it. So it's longer than that. But he signs the whole thing is my understanding.
It's the entire Defense Department authorization. Yeah. It's more than just UAP.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
For the
That's
whole
my
Defense
point.
Department. And but we hope he signs it.
Okay. So we hope he signs it, but I think that seemed like these guys were saying, or at least Jim was saying, that he wasn't in doubt.
I don't think we have any reason to believe that he wouldn't sign it.
Yeah. So, and I said, what's the likelihood of it passing and everything? And he brought up to me, well, you saw the CNN article, which was before today's big announcement, was yesterday's big announcement, you know. And I said, yes. And I said, yes, of course. And he says, well, the Pentagon would not be saying they have this department if this wasn't going to pass, because this passing is the funding for that department. The fact that we've got the cart before the horse means the horse is coming. And he's, you know, so he said specifically it's going to pass. Okay. So he said, yeah, he said that everyone should take what came out. And again, we were discussing it based upon what was put in CNN, but CNN obviously got a precursor to what came out today, which we were just talking about. So that the defense.gov press release, the establishment of unidentified aero phenomena task force, apparently came out, yes, just today, but the establishment happened on August 4th. But he said the fact that CNN had word of that, and now I feel like now we've got the exclamation points at the end of the sentence, which is what came out today directly on the government's website, on the Defense Department website. So then you go, okay, this is absolutely signed that this is going to pass, because he said this is just The bill is just the funding for that. They've announced that it exists as an, like it already exists. Okay. So he said, this is like an after effect. So he said, everyone should take that as this is absolutely going to pass. Because otherwise, he said, they would not have put that out. Okay. And I think that's huge. I think that's a huge takeaway, you know, from him to say everyone should take this as the bill's absolutely going to pass, because that would not have come out otherwise. Okay, so I also asked him, I said, any changes, anything? He said, no, not that they're hearing. He said, Congress could add to it. He said, again, I don't think they're going to take anything away from it. They can add. But he said, the fact that we've already got the news coming out about the existence of the group, he said the bill's going to go through for its funding, or they wouldn't announce that the group already exists. So, you know, so he said, again, it's just, it's a timing issue with getting the, you know, the money and everything, but he said it's a done deal. He was telling me they absolutely expect it, you know. Okay. So going back to, I also asked him, was Kamala Harris briefed? And at first he said, well, I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know who all was present.
And She's on the Intelligence Committee, Defense Committee, I brought that up. And Homeland Security Committee.
Hang on. I brought up that I had heard. Now, I have not seen, and Bob, if you have it, and stuff can be provided to Nicole, like the press release that was just shown to link to under this, when this gets posted, that's got to be linked to the press release.
I have the link.
Everybody can go look at it. But if there is something showing that she is on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, because Bob, is that your understanding that she is?
You can go to her website and see. She's on the Intelligence Committee, Defense Committee, and the Homeland Security Committee.
I brought
that up. And Judiciary.
Okay. I brought that up to Jim, that I said that was my understanding, that a few people had told me that. And he said, oh, he went, okay. He goes, yeah, well, okay, if she's on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, he said, everybody on, exactly, he said everybody on that committee went through those briefings that they did, them and the Navy. Okay, so he said, therefore, yes, he said, if that's the case, then she was absolutely briefed and was present for those briefings. So you guys, that's another huge takeaway, I thought. He said the Navy and those in charge, and I thought that was something new from him. He'd already said it was to the stars doing the briefings and the Navy, but he said the Navy and those in charge. And so I guess he's talking about the new people with the task force beyond the Navy, this gentleman with this other group. You guys can tell me the name in just a second, or I could look it up. But that they want to know what is going on. And he said, that's the good news is they really want to know what's going on with this. And yes, they want to get into the history and everything. Everyone, I know we're talking a lot about that. That's down the road. Okay. He says, you know, that's down the road. We're starting with square one. We're starting with incursions into military airspace, you know, because that's how they're selling it. We all know that. We all get that on this panel. He said, eventually the shoe will drop on the government saying we're not alone. In other words, what's behind this, the extraterrestrial presence. So he said, you know, eventually the shoe will drop. And he said, whether that's going to be 2 months or 6 months or a year from now, but he said, that's coming, because this is the beginning of a process. He said, we're not done, meaning to the stars and the briefings, they're not done. Okay, so they're going back to, I said this on the last panel, they're going to go back and talk to these guys more after the 180-day report. So this thing passes end of August, beginning of September, like Bob said, goes into effect October 1st, then there's the 180 days. I asked Jim about all that. He said that's how it should work. And then it goes into effect, and then the report, you know, goes to the Senate. It is supposed to be a public report. For people, you know, that's supposed to be made public, that's what they're saying. So now it's not the end, and it's not all disclosure. It's incursions into airspace, and it's it's what's in the stovepipes within each organization. And from there, he says, we go back and we tell them, now look into this part, where to dig deeper. And he said, there'll be more reports and more. This
Melinda,
is the beginning of a process.
Let me jump in real quick. Yeah. Let me jump in real quick. Sure. You just dropped a bomb there, I think. And
I dropped a couple bombs.
Well, I immediately thought, and Grant, you can help me out here a little bit because I think you actually posted it. What did Tom DeLong say? Was it last week where he did in Tom?
He's going to explode a big deal tomorrow. I mean Sunday.
Well, let's go back to his post. I think we even shared it in our group.
He said he's going to reveal some major crap on Sunday.
Well, we'll have to pay attention till Sunday.
Yeah, guys, I have to tell you something funny on that. Jim's on the phone with me. It clearly went longer than he and I both thought the phone call would go, you know. And so we're on the phone for, you know, just short of an hour or something. And he says, I got to go because I'm supposed to be on a Zoom call right now with Tom. So he left my call to get on a Zoom call with Tom. And he said, Tom and others, I don't know
so
who
Grant,
else.
Grant, remind us of your post, your latest Tom DeLong post. Because he got real cryptic at the end. And then, Joe, you just held something up to the screen.
The Intelligence Committee membership shows that our new vice president is on it.
Nice. Okay, Grant.
Well, the fact that Kamala Harris was in those briefings, ta-da, that, you know, there you go.
Yeah, I don't remember the post.
Oh. Of course you don't. It's been two days.
Tom's always. Did you put it in the link? Maybe in the chat.
I will share it to the link. I'm trying to go to your Facebook page right now because he ended it. You know, it was kind of cryptic.
Yeah, you find it. Now let's get Bob to weigh in here about what he thinks about all this because Bob hasn't really said too much.
I'm good. I'm enjoying this. So look, I have some things I'm gonna tell. We haven't mentioned Eric Davis. So let me talk about Eric Davis. I am privy to an email exchange that Eric Davis is on. And in the last couple of weeks, Eric Davis exploded on this email exchange. And it's up to Eric Davis to say everything he said, but I'm going to tell you what he did say that is relevant. He said that he was an advisor to the committees and to the people investigating the incidents, which everyone has made public, like the Nimitz and so forth. Eric Davis was involved as the scientific advisor in the investigation of these incidents because Eric Davis said so, and he's not accustomed to lying. The other thing is, and I'm just going to tell you right now, I am not going to say exactly what Eric said in this email exchange, but the entire UFO community would be very happy with what he said he told the committees when he testified. It's earth shattering.
When do you think it might be made public?
That's up to Eric. He can make it public when he wants. Okay. But I'm just going to tell you, all of the UFO community will hear what Eric Davis thought when he testified before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and others, what he thought these things were and were not. He was wide open. Man, he was blistering hot in this email exchange.
Okay, so 15% of the Senate. There's 15 members on that committee.
Yeah, it's huge. That's a lot of Senate. But I was just telling you, Davis gave them an opinion, and it was something we would all like. Okay, so
I have a feeling that there's a psychic connection.
Let me go further. Yeah. Okay, let me go further. So the 180 days takes us to February. Who wants disclosure to happen by tweet? No one wants disclosure to happen by tweet that wants to control all this information. So they're setting all this stuff up so that we have a person in charge who's not going to disclose all this stuff by tweet. So let me tell you something. In a conversation, the current person in charge of all classification for the United States of America said the words Roswell and interesting and so forth to his son. That declassified it. Right then and there, he opened his mouth and he declassified Roswell to his son. But same way Obama, when he opened his mouth about Area 51, when he hung a presidential medal on somebody's neck, he declassified Area 51 right then.
That's true. Can I just really quickly say that's incredible news about Eric Davis. And all I wanted to say, just because of my own pursuits of the consciousness aspect of the phenomena, and I know Grant Cameron will probably agree with me on this, and maybe some of you as well, that Eric Davis has definitely put forward in different ways his ideas regarding the psychic nature of the phenomena, and kind of, you know, sides with Jacques Vallée in regards to that kind of concept. So I'm wondering and hoping, and maybe reaching a little bit, but I'm wondering if the consciousness discussion is going to start coming in through testimony from Eric Davis on his opinion on what this represents.
It could be.
Jim and I talked about that as well. Jim was talking about that there were discussions about how strange that the technology is, how like those things. I have every reason to believe, based upon my conversation with Jim today, that those kind of things were absolutely discussed in those briefings.
Well, yep. I found the Tom DeLonge tweet from earlier. Let me read it real quick. He tweeted, ancient texts seem to have a common grouping of patterns that are all connected in intent to describe a control mechanism so different than what we would ever conclude. Don't assume that they are coming from other planets. This is also where the conversation gets disturbing.
Listen. This is so transparent. This is Tom DeLonge promoting the release of book 3 of his work with Lavenda.
Can I ask Bob a question?
Bob,
I want to ask you a question. You're going back to the Eric Davis thing. I've asked you this probably on every panel you've been on. And that's the whole thing about, if Eric Davis is openly talking about this, has he got the green light to do it? Because he's got a security clearance.
I can't imagine Eric Davis sending this out an email without the green light. Because he has an NDA. Somebody has told him he could.
I can respond to that.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Eric Davis has been a problem. There's tension there. There's been issues.
With the Wilson documents, you bet on it.
Eric is not a member of the TTSA.
Right.
Member of the bigger group.
Well, he may be part of the bigger group, or he just may be somebody that's got a lot of connections to this issue and has for years. Whether they have never talked about the group that backs them up. They've never talked about that. So we don't know. But I do know this, that a lot of things have happened with Eric that the TTSA is not happy about. And it doesn't mean it's not legitimate. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have the powerful things he could say. But they didn't want the Wilson document thing out.
No.
That became
right.
A major deal, caused all kinds of issues. And and he said other things. So he's, in other words, they have such a difficult problem. They're trying to advance this thing. There's lots of people inside that know a lot of stuff. There's all the researchers, like you all, know a lot of stuff. And they're trying to maneuver. And that they can't control everyone.
No.
They certainly can't control me.
They can't control Trump, so they want to get more control.
Yeah, and so they're trying to make this in the middle. By the way, this all was supposed to happen in 2017, not now. That was the plan, not now. This is it made it 10 times harder. Then they got a pandemic, right? I mean, I have nothing but empathy and appreciation for these guys if they never call me or send me an email. It is not easy what they're doing. But nevertheless, Eric is just to say that. Look, he is putting stuff out, but it's causing problems for them. And I think there's some other people that are probably somewhat of a problem. But I have a question for Melinda Leslie. Melinda, your relationship with Tim Semmy, then, I think is somewhat unique. I do not think any member of the TTSA team has a check-in, letting you know what's going on relationship. And Semivan is the CIA guy. full total CIA career, the one that a lot of people would immediately want to be concerned about, meaning, oh, wow, CIA, Jimmy Simavan, and so forth. Do you have any sense of why he has chosen to have this relationship with you and provide?
Yeah, I know exactly. And did we lose Danny?
Yeah, he had he had problems with his power going out.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Because I was going to have him comment on this too. Apparently, he's talking to
individuals. He's speaking to people in TTSA.
Yeah,
for sure.
He's speaking with people. Dolan is clearly speaking with people.
As is Joe Mergia, UFO Joe.
And Joe Mergia, you know, and others, obviously, you know, Knapp is, you know. So everybody's got their folks. You know, I'm not alone in that. Just happens mine's Jim, and that may be different than other people that they're talking to.
Tom, did you want to jump in?
Well, no, I wasn't done answering Steve's question.
Okay.
Because Steve also asked me, you know, what is Jim's interest in me? There's a short version and a long version of this story. Okay. The short version is that I had a client, a woman come on my tour who was friends with Jim. Her husband goes back with this group of people and her ex-husband, I should say. And anyway, so she was going to be talking to Jim, and she asked me on the tour, on my UFO sign tour, do you know who Jim Semivan is? I said, yes. Anyways, long story short, she put us together. And he called me like 2 days later. Now, that's the surface level story. Is he calls me because she tells him about me, says the tour is incredible, he wants to talk to me about it, whatever, he calls me. Now, Steve, and most of the people on this panel, I have a long history with these guys. I did a presentation for UFO Denmark that was the 50-year history of the working group, or 40-year history of the working group that I've been researching with Randy Kopang, my research associate, for 28 years. I actually have a involvement with one of the players, Jack Houck, going back before that. So I have a long history and continual involvement with these guys. Throughout those years, occasionally I've been handed off, okay, from one to another. So part of me goes, well, Jim's just the link in that chain. Okay, so that is the long story. There's a longer version of that. Now, I will tell you this. Jim has expressed incredible interest in my MILAB experiences and research. And anyone out there who's a case of mine know that I'm not giving any specific case details or any names ever. Okay, so if you're out listening to this later and you're someone I've worked with, names and cases, no. Okay, we're sticking to my experiences. But Jim has extreme interest in it. And he talks about how it really bothers him, how it's paid for, how it happens, what it means about the depth of the secrecy. And we have long discussions about it. He has expressed that he wants to sit down and spend like 2 whole days interviewing me in depth about it. And I've agreed to do that. Okay. Now, he expresses that those kind of things going on drive Chris Mellon crazy even more than they do Jim. So I've never spoken to Chris, but that's just what I'm being told. So I want everyone to know, though, that if they went and listened to my 40-year history of the working group presentation, they would know I'm not like lock sync with these guys. I ask questions. Often now Jim's and my discussions on the phone get into even arguments, okay, you know, but we ask each other tough stuff and we get into, you know, stuff. That's how I can say, Jay, that they are discussing the consciousness part, you know. Okay, so but we get into some pretty heated discussions, and even this today I just called him with a couple questions and it went longer, but I'm grateful. And I think it's because he's wanting to understand that from me, that he wants to meet with me. Of course, I'm extremely cautious, and I do question. I have said back in that presentation that I've given now like a couple of times. I think, Steve, I think you saw me do it for Laurie and Fenton about 2 years ago on the 40-year history of the working group. And And in the update I did just about this time last year for UFO Denmark, which is the last time I gave it, but that's the recorded, it's online for free, everyone can watch it. But in that, I talk about something that now Dolan's starting to talk about, which is a concern that this is going to be a partial disclosure, that what if it only goes so far and then they use it as, well, that's it, that's all there is to it. And Dolan's been talking about this a lot, Jay, and his thing with you guys got all into it. And that's been my concern. I said that. That's how I end that presentation I did. I said, you know, what this is a partial disclosure, you know, partial disclosure isn't complete disclosure, you know. And so I still have concerns, but I have my foot in the door. I'm talking to him. You guys, hello, I'm going to milk that for all it's worth, of course. and I'm going to share everything I hear with you guys, you know, so, or with whoever I'm talking to. But, and any of you can contact me privately about it. I'd be more than happy to talk to you. But anyways, there you go. I kind of gave you the short version and the shortest version, the shortest version of the long version.
Wonder, could I get in a quick question for Steve? And I know that's sure. You know, an oxymoron because it'll be a 3-hour answer.
I'm looking at the members.
I was asking Steve, but for everybody, looking at the members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So these are 15 senators who apparently know whatever Eric Davis has shared, which apparently is a lot and exciting stuff. Both senators from California, Dianne Feinstein and Senator Harris, both senators from Maine, I thought was interesting, plus one of the two senators out of New Mexico. So you're there in DC. Is it possible to go, and you know, I know it's a pandemic. Are these guys in their offices? Are you over there knocking on doors? Can you pick up the phone and call them? Or is DC a ghost town now, Steve? Or how are you lobbying on the issue? Well, I think it's kind of exciting that both senators from California, both senators from Maine, why would they be on that committee? Is there a connection to this issue that caused them to be selected for that or be the ones briefed?
To answer your question, nobody wants to publicly talk about the ET issue in this town. Generally, they don't want to, and now they really don't want to. And the few little things that have been said have been because of the action of TTSA. I'm not Christopher Mellon. I'm not a former deputy assistant secretary of defense for intelligence. I didn't work on the intelligence committee staff. They're not going to talk to me, period. I can call them all day long. I'm not going to bother. I don't. We have two things going on right now. The last months of Donald Trump and the pandemic. But in spite of that, because they have briefed so many, Tom DeLong alluded to many, many interviews. I'm going to guess that they have probably given private briefings to 40 to 50, 60 people on the Hill, appropriate committees, which is a decent amount. That's a lot. And they've also given one to the president, mostly on the Nimitz thing. So they have this issue all teed up for hearings, but nothing can be said now. A few members said that they got briefings, and I'm sure that when Mellon heard that, he winced, right? But other than that, they're not talking about the content. Nobody's coming out and giving a press release, a press conference and saying, here's what I learned when I met with Tom, with Christopher Mellon and his pilots. No, because it's not for now, it's for next year. That 180 days that was put into that bill, that's not some sort of legal number. That's a number they chose. They could have chose 60, 90, 180. They chose the number of days which will put the quote, deadline for getting that material right in the middle of the hearings, which I believe are going to start not long after the inauguration. Very smooth move, particularly on the part of Rubio, who wants in on this, right? And he was able to get a splash on that, which again is, I don't think, ideal. The TTSA is doing a balancing act here. They want to advance this, but they don't want to trip it now, right? I mean, the wrong person says the wrong thing to the wrong newspaper, and this thing could blow. And everything is going to get strange. So they're doing pretty well. It's relatively contained. That's the way I can answer that. I am, in fact, I'll tell you, I have deliberately held back on a lot of what I'm about to do simply because I did not want to add any fuel to the fire. I did not want to add any additional heat to the tea kettle on the oven. I thought things were moving too fast as it was. Now I'm about to get going, and you'll see me emerging here over the next weeks, and I'll pick it up. And as we get closer to the election, I'll get more active. But again, we have an unbelievably interesting, complex problem right now. We have a pandemic. We've got an unbelievable political situation, unprecedented in our time, with one of the most important elections in our history.
Economic collapse.
All of this is, we're trying to manage. It's not easy. It's not easy to walk this path, but hopefully it'll all work out.
Tom wanted to jump in. Tom, jump in.
Thanks. I think it's interesting, and I had the privilege of having a brief conversation with Ralph Blumenthal on the phone as well. But I think that Blumenthal and Keene were really trying to get some people to go on the record about crash recovered UFOs. And that's what they were really interested in. And I found it significant that when the New York Times article came out, that Eric Davis was the only person that went on the record. And I don't think that they were able to get anyone else to go on the record. And Harry Reid supposedly did. And then Harry Reid backed down. And personally, I think he double-crossed them.
Can I just say that they did actually manage to get other people on record? Because I don't know if you've seen the interview I did with Leslie and Ralph, but they did confirm that they had people that would go on record, but for other reasons, including what Ralph Blumenthal said was space, you know, space reasons and editorial choices, narrative choices in regards to the article. There were reasons why other people were left out, but they did have corroborating sources. I did have a journalist source basically tell me that they had two corroborating senior military sources who had confirmed that crash retrieval programs existed, and they were not included in this article. So that is not the people included. I don't know who their names are, but they do have other sources, and I do believe that those sources have spoken about crash retrievals. And Ralph Blumenthal did indicate that some of them actually were willing to go on record, but were left out for pretty much reasons unknown. It was quite ambiguous. That's the reason.
That's great. But in reading the article, it was apparent to me that the editors stripped that down to the absolute minimum.
Well, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
See, the Reid kerfuffle was telling, because I think the rules of the road have been, you do not say extraterrestrial. You do not say alien. So they're getting a little closer of late. Off-world, that's not on the menu. Not supposed to say that. And either he said it and he immediately realized, oh, I screwed up, and tried to get it back, or it was just a misquote on the part of the reporters, which happens. But yeah, the off-world thing is another example. Right?
I thought that was a nudge towards the Admiral Wilson.
They're staying just behind a line there. And that's fine.
Yeah. Jay, I agree with you. I thought that was totally written to be I think we all saw that it was clearly a nod to the Wilson dog.
Admiral Wilson looks, yeah.
So since we brought up off-world world vehicles and crash retrievals, and a little bit ago we did bring up the obvious, which is Roswell. And I know a few of you, we've in our discussion group, we were discussing, like, what's Donald Schmidt have to say about this? He's Mr. Roswell, you know, he's written the book and everything. But what we haven't been discussing too much publicly is not only Roswell, but other crashes that are known that researchers have put diligence into. And I mean, Roswell is, you know, like the end all be all. We all know that name, but we also know there's other foreign governments that have claimed crashes as well. Our not buddies over there, you know, at the beginning of this conversation, we were talking about Putin. Like, what's going to stop him from disclosing their probable crash retrievals that they have? So if we're not going to get Roswell, do you guys think that this is truly just like a techno grab, or are they going to come out and give us these crashes?
I think it's a space race.
I've said this before and I'm going to say it again. Everyone remembers all the reporting of all the people who were in Roswell about all the criminal activity done on behalf of the government in Roswell in 1947 and 48. They're never going to admit all of that. Never.
So where does that football get kicked to then if it's not Roswell and we're tracking?
I would say Nimitz and Princeton and then when with crash retrievals. I don't know, actually, that's a good point when it comes according to literally Jim, the crash retrievals.
According to Jim, that'll come up later. You know, he said that's something as the 180 day report and what they do get on the surface and where to look deeper. He said that, you know, that stuff will come out because there are, from what appears from the known, you know, information that, and you know, and whistleblowers, whatnot, that there are multiple crashes, obviously, and that those are worldwide. And then also, like he was saying too, with the fact that we're not alone and an official announcement about we're not alone. Everything he was saying to me, and I said, Jim, that sounds like that from what you're saying, that's going to come fairly soon, like in the next year or something. And he said it could. He said it very much could, because as soon as this 180 day report and what's known by each of the agencies comes out, then it's a free for all, you know, and it'll go from there. And that's, we're all wanting, and Dave, I'm hearing you about what you're saying about the media, you know, that's when it will go there. Because it'll be more information, they'll want to know more, and additional reports. The thing is, how far it will go does remain in question. But Jim says they're not letting it rest, meaning to the stars, of course. And he said the Navy. He kept going back to the Navy, and he also said those in charge, the Navy and those in charge. So it's more than the Navy that are pushing for this. And that was a very interesting statement from him. You know, it's to the stars, Navy, and those in charge who really want this and want it to go there and want it to go into we're not alone, crash retrievals, et cetera. You know, the whole thing.
There are factions within the DOD.
Talking about crash and outside it, in private corporations.
Another thing, you guys, I almost forgot, I really wanted to mention that he said before, and I didn't write it down, so it slipped my mind because, you know, the conversation was just today, happened very fast, but he said, and this was very interesting, he said, all of this has been in the works since 2012. Everything they're doing to the stars, and this whole process has been in the works since 2012.
That's an interesting statement. I note that. That's very interesting because they've never discussed the origin. Tom DeLonge didn't enter the picture until, I think, 2015, maybe early 2015.
Yeah, I think you're about right.
But I'm sure that, look at it this way, what he's really saying is that there have been people inside the Pentagon that have believed for some time that this embargo needs to end. It's a big problem for the government. It's a big problem for the DOD. It's an embarrassment to the country.
Security has cost trillions of dollars.
And it's trillions. But it's easier said than done. All right, so I'm not surprised. They could have been talking about this around the lunch table going back to 2012. But one thing you need to you can be assured of, everything that they have done has been carefully thought through. The cases that they're emphasizing, the cases they're choosing to bring to the meetings on the Hill, the gun camera footage they have released, everything is being carefully done to maximize the ability to get those hearings underway, which is why you are not going to hear anybody on the TTSA team say contactee, all right? Not going to happen, and it hasn't happened. And I'm not pushing them to do that. If I was a contactee, I'd be chomping at the bit. Like, what about me? Right? This is a big deal. What about that? Because that's going to impede the ability to get to those hearings. But once the hearings get underway and pick up a little speed, hey, everything's up in the air. And man, we're going to be glued to our TVs. I got a big one, right? And we're going to stay in front of that TV and watch every second of those hearings.
Can I jump in on this 2012 thing?
Can I just really quickly say something, just real quick, in regards to the origins of TTSA, because Steve, I didn't know if you're aware, but Tom DeLonge has kind of detailed the origin story of TTSA a few times and kind of given a backstory of how it started with him going into Lockheed Martin and basically being introduced to contractors.
That was well after 2012.
Oh, was it? Okay. Well, there's not knowing my
I was told today
properly,
that this is pre-planning going back to 2012 is what he said. And this is the other thing I want to bring up. I think I said this on the last panel. If not, I'll clarify here. In one conversation I had with Jim, he went on about his background and his friendship with John Alexander going back many, many years. In a separate conversation, he said the same thing about Hal Puthoff. Hal and I go back many, 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 many years. And then in another conversation he talked about, he goes back many, many years with Kit Green. And so that told me, okay, Jim goes back many, many years with the working group. Okay, it wasn't hard to figure out. So, and I realized, and then he's saying this was all planned with 2012, where we go back with the history of ATIP and Bass, you know, and we know the history. It's ATIP, it's Bass, you know, it's the same guys, and in conjunction with a plan, obviously, by the federal government, the Pentagon, DOD, whatever, to roll this out. And right. And I think it is what it is, that, you know, that's exactly what they've done.
Let me add one thing. John Podesta has just done an interview in the last month. And in that interview, he states, I worked a lot with Reed on that program, and I'm glad they finally got something to go. And if you remember the rollout of Tom DeLong talking about it, he says two things. For one thing, he talks about Mr. L, who was never allowed to identify. And then later on, he says, I hired him away, referring to Lou Elizondo. I hired him away, which is a little bit different than the retired story. And the other one is Tom DeLong tells a story of phoning. This is in the WikiLeaks, where he phones John Podesta. And he says, I make my little pitch to him, and John's just listening. And then he figures, John doesn't say anything, and he figures, he just figures I'm a crazy rock star. He doesn't really care. And so I figure at the end of that, and John says, phone me back in a couple of months. I'm pretty busy. So he doesn't phone him back because he figures, like, the guy didn't buy the thing at all. John Podesta phones Tom DeLong back, and he says, I need you to come to Washington right now. This is very important, and I want to participate. So John Podesta had gone in the background, who's talking to Tom DeLong, and you can see this whole deal that John was part of this. And if he was working with Reed, we're talking way before 2012, where he said, I work with Reed a lot on this whole issue.
Well, it's very important. Spielberg's miniseries Taken came out in 2002. That was 10 years earlier. And Steve, you've talked about Podesta, and that premiere was happening in the office building next to the White House.
Yeah, Reagan building.
I had a contact, real briefly, and then I'll let you take it over. I had a contact Steve knows about, who I met through an RV forum. We had the same model RV, who had been the chief briefing officer for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And we had discussions around the edges of this issue, which I've not talked about, but my undivided attention. He passed away a year ago, August 5th. Dear friend,
speak up.
Wonderful American hero. Second in command at Fort Bliss when Columbia landed, documentable career. But one of the things he told me, I asked him about Corso, and he knew Corso, but wouldn't talk about it. But I asked about Taken. And I said, you know, I watched it nonstop during a dust storm at Burning Man in 2010. And I said, you know, what do you think of Steven Spielberg's Taken? And his response was, the color and model of the car, the commander of that base, was different than what they showed in the film. Like, that's your criticism about what they got wrong?
Yeah.
Let's 2002 in Taken, was that a disclosure moment, Steve? Can you talk about 10 years earlier? Even?
The Taken used a theatrical version of the truth embargo based around family, but he was having some fun with it. Look, there's two points I think I need to emphasize, I think you'll appreciate. First of all, throughout the 2000s, from 2000, certain, go back to 2007, whoever the hell was involved in ATIP, Elizondo, whatever else, and others inside, I assure you, the Pentagon and the CIA, were fully aware of the Clinton ET connection. They were aware of the Rockefeller Initiative. They were aware of Podesta's connection to trying to get files out. They knew all about that. They knew that history had dropped the issue into the lap of Bill and Hillary Clinton. And then the question is, what were they going to do about it? So they knew that, all right? And so 2012, this program ends, and Hillary Clinton ran in 2008, right? So the program was still going on. And then Obama wins, which was kind of, in terms of advancing the program they had in mind, the situation during that period was not ideal. And then Clinton runs again. And it was because she was running again that they decided now's the time to make our move, when they formally put it together. When Tom gets involved, they give it a name. And they planned on launching it right after she wins the election in November 2016. 500 articles were written about her connection to this issue. Millions of people saw those articles. The connection between the Clintons and the ET issues was already fully solidified. Once she gets elected, the TTSA comes out, gives the articles to the New York Times, published December 9, 2016. Hearings start in 2017, not even a problem. And everybody goes down in history. Now, second point, the man who may be president in next year has a direct connection back to the Clintons. That connection goes, well, the connection goes through essentially Podesta and Hillary Clinton, who are part of the administration, right, that he's the vice president of. And we know that Podesta talked about the ET issue with Barack, briefed him in on it, what their plans were. So Biden has that connection back to the Clintons through Podesta. And so when he goes into the White House, he knows this history. He knows all that's going on with between the Clintons, Podesta, the people around him on the ET issue going back to 1993. And so from the standpoint of the Department of Defense, Biden should not be a problem. He will cooperate. He's on board. He probably fully understands what it will mean if he ends up being the disclosure president. If he doesn't win the election, it's a whole different situation. I think if the Democrats win the House and Senate, they'll probably proceed because the Democrats control all the committees and they could do whatever they want in hearings. And there's nothing that President Trump, second term, could do about it, right? And he might end up being the disclosure president, but it'll be the committees in the Democratic Congress that make it happen. But these are extremely complex equations to try to solve. But Biden is connected on this issue. He's wired in. And that is a very good thing.
Did I drag Danny Silva in? He hasn't really said too much. Well, Danny, what do you think is going to unfold here?
Everyone, before that happens, I've got to go because it's okay. 3 a.m. here. Right. So I just wanted to say I'm really happy to be here.
I wanted to say also, thanks for saying goodbye. Dave Scott also had to leave, and so did Melinda. So,
well, it's 3 a.m., so I'm going to go pass out now in my bed. So just, thank
long
you so
live
much,
the
guys.
Queen. Long live the queen.
Take care, everyone.
She could be
thank
the queen
so
of disclosure. Let the queen disclose. Oh, well,
yeah, I don't think we're going to get that anytime soon. Also, Nicole, is there any chance you'd be able to send me a download link for this?
I will,
I
yes.
haven't been able to record it. All right. Thank you so much, guys.
No
Take
problem.
Care. Thank you. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you.
Cheers.
All right. Danny Silva.
Danny Silva. You haven't said much tonight.
Thank you, Grant. In what context do you mean?
Well, you've got some sources. You're on sort of the leading edge of this thing. Do you see anything happening that we don't really know about, or what are you anticipating is going to unravel the way you see it?
I think it's all UAPTF. Everything right now. It's the biggest story. It's really great. You know, I've been able to confirm that it was it's funded now. Where you know we ATIP had funding off and on, and they were having problems with that, and it's been funded now. UAPTF, the continuation of ATIP, it's funded. It's stood up in the vernacular that they use. So this is just really huge, and I think the issues that we're bringing up about the media, this is hopefully going to kick them in the butt and get them more involved.
Let me ask you two questions related to that.
Sure.
Number one, what kind of money do you hear is floating around? And number two, what will be the difference between this and Blue Book? Because Blue Book was open. We're going to look into this. And you know where that went. So those two questions, the funding and what will be different between this investigation and what happened with the U.S. Air Force?
I have no idea how much funding. I haven't heard any numbers. I just heard about that today after the the press release. I asked around. And that's when I heard about the funding. And I hope we end up hearing more about it. And they haven't gotten the funding yet. I don't know if that's going to occur when the bill is passed or what exactly is happening. But the fact that they announced it with the press release means that they have the funding, I think, since August 4th it was. What was your other question, sir?
The question about what's going to be different between this and the investigation of U.S. Air Force Blue Book.
I'm not sure exactly. You know, all I know is that we have Elizondo and Mellon, and we have these UAPTF guys, and they're not messing around. So it's hard for me to compare it to Blue Book. I wasn't around when Blue Book was happening, and I know that was basically even maybe turned into, I don't know if I want to say worst case scenario, but it didn't turn out how we wanted it to turn out. But I'm just hoping that, you know, it's 2020 now, and I'm hoping it is going to have nothing like that happening. But the UAPTF story is just so big, and it's as big or almost as big as ATIP being announced, like I said earlier. And I feel like the paradigm shift of the public to know that there's a current UFO program going on. It's not in the past. It's current right now. And I think the more press, you know, I'm messing with stocks these days. And you invest in a stock, and then you wait for public relations to happen or a catalyst to happen for the stock to go up. So every time we're hearing about a press release from UAPTF, or we're hearing about any kind of a public announcement about it, their stock's going up. So their stock went up big time today. I think we could all agree on that. I'm hoping for a big mass media push now, and hopefully going into next week. And, you know, once the bill's passed, there's going to be more of that. Once the 180 days, what a cool story to get people interested and involved. It's like a sports clock ticking down. And once that happens, I think, you know, there's going to be more and more press. I think this is it. I'm not super concerned about this, the idea of the partial disclosure, because you don't like light something on fire and then try to put it out. Or the whole thing's burning. And even if they give us partial disclosure, the media is going to run with it, because you can't do partial and then not have everyone else jump in and run with it. So I think that's really an important idea. And unless they're trying to mix in, you know, disinformation somehow, which I just don't think is the case at this point, that you can't have partial disclosure. It's going to go all the way, whether the government does it or someone else takes over and gives us full disclosure. Too many people are going to be asking questions now. The cat is, you know, whatever analogy or whatever saying you wanted to have, that's what's going on now. I think you said it, Grant, and you've said this for years, and I thought it was really astute, where you were saying, if you want to cover this stuff up, you just don't talk about it, right?
Yeah.
You've always said that, Grant.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's the best way I could put it. They just wouldn't have talked about it this whole time. They're talking about it. They want this out. And, you know, they is kind of a hard word to say. Some people want it out. Some people don't. But otherwise, they just wouldn't be talking about it. Like you said, Canada does. Yeah. And they're talking about it. So it's going. It's going down right now.
What, do you think it's got some legs with this, like, it seems like no story can get any traction today as long as we have, you know, the president who's sort of sucking up the oxygen of all the stories, and with an election coming up, do you see traction in terms of like the story coming today that the media is actually going to spend some time on it and not chase the Trump story or the election story or something like that?
You know, it's never going to be enough press for us to be happy. 100%. But every time it happens, it's better and better every time.
Yeah.
And I think the task force, like I said, the task force going on currently, it just changes things for people. It changes things for the public. And we just got to start slapping people and letting them know that about these facts. And there's more people talking about it. You know, Tom Rogan, a friend of mine, he's with the Washington Examiner, a big paper, and he's writing about UFOs. And I know he gets pushback on it, and he still does it. So I'd like to see more journalists putting their money where their mouth is and caring about the world and caring about this really important topic, putting their careers on the line for it. And I think more and more people are going to be doing it. And eventually, and we've seen it happen somewhat, that's where the ratings are going to go. People are going to be more interested in it. We're going to have burnout on the political stuff over and over again. It's not going to be as big of a story as the election, you know, itself, of course, but we're chipping away at it every single time. And I think it's getting better.
Thanks for doing what you do in terms of pushing the issue.
Yes, sir, Grant. Thank you for having me on, and I'm always here anytime you need me.
Beautiful. Has anybody got something they want to say before we shut down here?
I want to just introduce a kind of weird note. In 2012, Christopher Bledsoe had a major experience.
Yeah.
And Jim Simivan, Tom DeLong, Grant Cameron, John Alexander, and everybody went to see Chris Bledsoe, including some really bad people that I think you know about, Grant.
Yes.
That threatened Chris Bledsoe's life.
Yes, okay. I know.
So Grant has published a picture, And this picture that Grant published was incredible. I don't think people realize the implications of this picture. This picture was of an envelope that had Chris Bledsoe's address on it. And laid on top of this envelope was a napkin with a presidential seal and Camp David on it that Tim Taylor sent to Chris Bledsoe. There is one man between 2012 and 2016 that could have invited somebody to go to Camp David for Tim Taylor to tell him a story. I don't think we know all the reasons that all of these people we're talking about tonight ran to Chris Bledsoe's house to talk to him and still do. So I just want to say there's something going on there that we don't understand.
Good point.
I spent a weekend with Chris on the way from D.C. down to New Orleans for the Libertarian Convention 2 years ago. And, you know, what an incredible experience. He took me to the sites, camped out in my RV there next to his lake by his home. And what a case. I have a question for you all kind of as a meta brain. I mean, you can imagine these hearings happening, and I'm imagining questions from our discussion of maybe about an hour ago, like how many crashes and where, you know, globally in the United States especially. We're going to get people testifying to answers to that question. And even a more interesting question, how many operating craft do you think are here right now sitting at the bottom of the Pacific or flying around off that island that unidentified pointed to? Are those the kind of questions you think we'll have in the hearings? And what are the answers?
Start off with the basics, and I'll start off with the Nimitz case and some of those standard military witnesses, and it'll expand from there. How far they'll go, we don't know. The material they're going to get back from the government entities regarding a bill, the appropriations bill, that goes to the Intelligence Committee. It doesn't go to the New York Times. And they'll decide what they receive should be brought into the hearings or not. What's important is we get disclosure itself. And so it won't take a lot of hearings to make that decision possible. And then we get the confirmation from the president. And then things will get much more intense and interesting, but we'll be in a different place entirely. And what gets talked about when is going to be decisions made. The media will have an impact, depending on how much pressure they want to put on the government. The contactees will come forward. It'll be the post-disclosure world. But the hearings will be pretty straightforward, but designed to get the job done. And the job, I assure you, is not to just hold some hearings and say, well, we did some hearings. We're all done now. Good. Fantastic. No, they're getting the hearings in order to set the stage so the president can make the announcement. I feel real good about next year around April. I think April will be a good time. But the sooner it happens, the more it helps Joe Biden. And that's a big deal. So as well as the committee chairs, if you're a chairman of a committee next year, and somebody, you're going to be able to hold a hearing with 200 million people watching. Oh, you want that? You want it immediately. So I don't think they're going to wait around. I'm starting to get really excited about next year. Just need to stay alive until next year.
I have a quick question. Are foreign diplomats allowed at these hearings? I mean, public. I know we have
The mandated hearings in the Rubio language are public. There'll be classified hearings mm-hmm. and classified annex, but there's a public report mandated in the law.
Well, I'm asking because I know in years past, we have had other governments do forms of, you know, bringing their data to the public, a soft form of disclosure. I keep thinking about the French government putting out the Cometa report.
Cometa
report, which was pretty much, if you study it, it was pretty much kind of like a call to our own Pentagon, the United States Pentagon, saying, we think you might have some tech that you want to share with your NATO allies kind of thing. So do you think we will see foreign governments that have done a form of disclosure kind of come up and rally for the United States to do this, to lay it out on the table?
No, When things get going, don't be surprised that other governments are going to hold their own hearings. When you have an audience this big, you don't promote somebody else's government. Those witnesses will testify to the government in France, UK, how quickly other hearings begin in other countries after we start will be very interesting to note. The quicker it is, that's a strong indication that this is going to go through. But it'll be all U.S. military witnesses, I think, in our hearings.
Tom, go ahead.
As soon as the crashes happen all the time.
You seem to have the idea that Joe Biden believes that he has a huge amount to gain from getting involved in this. And okay. I don't know that there's any evidence that that is true. And in fact, I think in terms of general political behavior, and you've said it yourself, Steve, politicians have nothing to gain from getting involved in this.
Well, I disagree. Politicians have always had the potential. Well, let me say politicians. Look, the lower end politicians, your members of Congress, staff, things like that, absolutely. You get into this, no good comes from it. The glory is only going to go to one person, the head of state that makes the confirmation. Now, that glory will trickle down to the party and Congress, particularly if Congress gets involved in the hearings. But this has never happened before. I'm giving an informed opinion that the first head of state that confirms the extraterrestrial presence and ends the truth embargo will receive in that moment the greatest political legacy in the history of government. Nothing will compare. And that legacy, of course, gives them enormous political power. They have just told the world the most profound truth ever. And they're telling the world that's really become weary of lies and mendacity and so forth. They're so sick of it. And finally, they get a major truth. And then the hearings are putting out truths. And it's all great. And the president can sit there and say, I'm the one that did it. And every other president before him didn't. Hillary wanted to. She didn't make it. Barack might have wanted to, but the circumstances simply did not work out for him. Clinton was stonewalled. Carter was stonewalled. Right. Prior to the end of the Cold War, it wasn't going to happen. So you can take them out. And so it looks like it's falling. Into
well, if the benefits of being the disclosure president were so great, as you say, it would have happened by now.
No, not at all. Clinton was despised by the military intelligence complex. They hated him from the day he arrived. And when Podesta and he started trying to press for records, they stonewalled the hell out of him. And then, of course, he got investigated, and he and his wife got investigated for every scandal in Washington they come up with, and then they impeached him. Carter was absolutely stopped cold, told to go pound sand. And so it's not like it would have happened. Any efforts were pretty much locked down because this subject, this issue, the research, everything is in deep ASAP programs. You can't get there. Right. If you don't have absolute top clearance and special clearance, you don't get to see that stuff. You don't hear about that stuff. Even the president doesn't hear about it. And so in order for a president to be the disclosure president, what had to happen is that the military intelligence complex needed on its own to sort of decide it's time to end this truth embargo. That doesn't mean everybody in the MIC, but obviously enough within the MIC have come together on this that they have set up the TTSA, allowed it to go out and proceed as it has. And so the reason it hasn't happened before is there wasn't a TTSA before. This is it, finally, thank God.
Well, I'm very skeptical of that, okay? I'm very skeptical. In fact, only the party heads of these top committees, like intelligence committees, they're the only ones that could at this point in time can be fully briefed on some of these special access programs.
Yeah, they're and, not the intelligence
and the gang of eight
out of the special access programs
and the gang of eight and the committee heads.
Yeah, but
other people called super users as well, and that
yes, get, yeah, there are several super users, are those people inside the U.S. government that can have access to basically whatever they want because they're very trusted individuals. They're called super users.
Okay, but I doubt any of them are on a committee in Congress.
Because no, they're not.
Yeah, okay. So that's the issue. The issue, the embargo has been successful. The wall is pretty much held. But finally, the Department of Defense has stepped in and decided, okay, let's get this done. Not that it was going to be easy. They chose an interesting vehicle, the TTSA. Let's put the arts and science and throw that out the window. And Tom was involved. That's not a big deal. It's a little unusual, but it's not totally out of the ordinary. It would have happened. And they proceeded in a way that makes sense. But understand, they did not want to have that announced before the election when WikiLeaks emails.
That was a disaster.
That was a disaster for them.
That was a disaster.
An absolute disaster. That screwed them. But they go, okay, it's okay, it's okay. She's going to win. We're going to open up. We're going to rock. And she loses. Now what? So they were sitting there already exposed with nowhere to go. And they just went silent, trying to see what would happen with Trump. Maybe he would become presidential. Maybe he would become, I don't know, FDR. Who knows? The point is that every month it went by, it got worse and worse and worse. And finally, they realized that it wasn't going to get any better. They were already exposed. They needed to take action. They waited 11 months, and they announced in October. And then the question was navigating the next 2.5 years, right, so that they could get where they needed to go. But I think some of you have contact with them. Ask them. Ask Semivan. Ask Mellon. Did any of you consider driving this issue to hearings and getting disclosure under Donald Trump? They probably wouldn't answer the question. But I think the answer is simply no, that we did not want that. And what choice do we have to just try to do? So they kept things alive. They moved things forward a little at a time. It seemed like a lot to us, but that was the challenge that they face, and they still face it. So let's just hope that nothing dramatic happens and things unfold as I hope they will. And come early February of next year, let's all be ready. Be ready, know what producers to call, know your areas, be prepared to engage the media right away and make it clear that, yeah, I've been at this for 30 years. I know a great deal. So why the hell are you talking to Dr. Phil Plate? Why are you interviewing Seth Shostak? Talk to me. But until then, no, it's not going to.
I was going to end this, but I want to end with a controversial question. What will the disclosure be? I mean, you hear the Tom DeLonge quote, and I've always said this whole thing. We are being engaged by some sort of phenomena. Yes, we have crash saucer material. Yes, we have some bodies. But what are we actually dealing with? That may be something that I think nobody has the answer to. Maybe
that's why the activist movement has made it simple. Disclosure, the event, is the announcement of the ET presence. That's all.
But you're saying ET. Tom DeLonge says no ET, and I
can't say that yet.
And Valet says that, and there's a lot of controversy about what we're dealing with here.
No, there's no controversy for me.
We should just call them non-human intelligence or something like that in general.
Look, they can't say these words now because it's
they do call it an
impediment to getting the hearings. Once the hearings get underway, once we get to disclosure, there is no more. There's no longer a reason to play games with the language. You'll simply say what it is. It is non-human intelligence that did not grow up in Moscow, Peru, or Detroit, meaning extraterrestrial. That's disclosure. Now, what we get after that is what I'll be talking about a lot, Bryce Abel talks about, Richard Dolan, is the rest of the story in the post-disclosure world. And I don't think anybody knows what will come up when, how long this will take to get to, we don't know. I know that we would all like to have everything dumped right on day two. Here it is, the whole thing, all the files, all the records. No, this is going to take months and months to unfold, and it will be done in a way that minimizes upset, makes the government look good. We're not going to talk about the MyLabs program on day 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Right, they'll get to it eventually, but it'll be down the line. Same with contactees. But things like the Nimitz event and stuff like that, nuclear weapons tampering, pure gold. that'll get things cooking right away. So you can expect those to be up in front. And if you look at what's happening on the unidentified show and what they've been talking about, it's all about these pilot sightings and the Navy events and so forth, which is absolutely safe politically for any of the committee chairs. And so that's where they'll start.
I thought one of the most interesting episodes was the commercial pilots.
Yeah, they could bring those in. That's all pre-disclosure, right? What they have to do is create a body of evidence under oath. Remember, nobody under oath has spoken about this issue since 1968.
Yeah.
So that the American people are going to go, whoa, look, that's it, right? Okay, great. Then the president could come out and say, I've met with my advisors, I've met with the congressional staff, committee people, I've met with the DOD. The evidence is pretty clear now that there's an ET presence. This is appropriate. It's not disruptive. It's politically a good path. It's the way to go. Not a way to go is for someone like Putin, who doesn't need to go through any of this crap, to simply hold a press conference in the Kremlin
and walk ET out.
ETs are here. Here's a bunch of video. I am the ET.
There is some kind of group within the DOD matrix, whether it's a cabal or whatever, that controls certain special access programs out there.
Yes.
Perhaps the reverse engineering of recovered UFOs. That secrecy is so serious and so tight,
right,
and almost absolute, that if we foresee so-called disclosure based on the difficulty of getting that publicly disclosed, if you look at it from that angle, I think that's going to explain a lot more what we're going to see than what you're saying, Steve.
One of the things about the origin story that I would love to hope learn one day is who were the people inside the Pentagon that, well, we know the TTSA people were talking while they were working for the government, but who else was involved and how extensive is their support inside? Melinda, I think at one point I heard her say months ago that Semi Van said there was about 40 people inside the Pentagon who have their back. Okay. Then the next question would be, were any of the people that were directly managing these USAPs also in discussion with you? In other words, did they have something to say about whether to go forward or not? I would guess probably not. The head of USAP programs, their whole life is maintaining that as an unacknowledged special access program and doing that work. And they're absolutely apolitical. And so I can't imagine that they would have even ventured to put forward a statement about, oh yeah, do this. No. But the people that authorized it clearly are high level. And so once disclosure does take place, let's be clear. The President of the United States can go over to the Pentagon anytime he or she wants and say, I want a full reading on every single USAP period. And nobody in those deep classified programs will dare step up and say, Mr. President, you don't have a right to know. Not going to happen. But no president has done that. And so you have various segments. You've got the TTSA on the outside. You've got the deep programs and the people managing it. You've got people that know about it that are supporting the TTSA. And then you've got people in the Pentagon that don't want this to happen. Right? So it's pretty interesting. I mean, somebody's going to write a 1,000-page book about this, maybe 20 books. And I just wish we knew it all now, but we don't.
And the people that don't want this to happen, they're not doing too good right now because it's happening.
That's right. They are, that you haven't, that, by the way, very interesting. Has anybody in any of the military services or intelligence agencies, not one person, come forward in some form or fashion and condemn this?
Well, Susan Goff sure tried to derail it.
No, that's right, Bob. I mean, we keep getting contradictory messages out of the Department of Defense.
Well, that was the public relations office, the front
office. For the Joint Chiefs, yes.
They were a little confused, and there was some confusion because they were not read in. When the TTSA goes out, the spokesperson of the Pentagon was not read in, and so they started getting these questions, and they're going, what the hell? And they made some statements that were not true, but they weren't trying to deceive us. And so things finally settled down.
There's a lot of jealousy that goes around. You know, when you can't tell your own boss what you're doing because of stovepipes, and you know, it, and everyone isn't read into the same things. So Elizondo, he may have not been able to tell this person. That person's jealous after he came forward. Other people are mad after he comes forward. So there's a lot of that going on. It's personal issues too.
Yeah, I look, these guys, they when they stepped out and did this, it was not going to be easy for them. They knew that. It was going to be no picnic. And so the last thing they wanted was to have the whole thing get delayed 4 years. But they've stuck with it. A couple of people have dropped out. A couple of replacements. So I have just enormous admiration for these men and the one woman, Gilpin. What they have done is going down in history. It's one of the biggest, well, it's one of the most significant historical events. Absolutely. And they will all be appropriately, I think, acknowledged in other ways. And I backed them from day one.
Another big problem that Elizondo's version of ATIP had was getting this information all the way to the top. With the announcement today, it's Norquest, right, Bob? Norquest? With him being involved now, there's no longer that problem of them getting information to the top of the DoD and other places. So that's another win for them.
He's got some stars on his shoulder.
Yeah, so this is a big deal. A lot of the problems that Lou's version of ATIP had, the current 2020 UAPTF, is winning. And they've solved some of these problems. Thanks.
The other thing that a lot of people don't realize is, do you know what the United States government largest fleet of air vehicles is controlled by? The United States Navy.
Oh, yeah,
the aviators are much larger than the Air Force.
Yeah. The Navy has been key to this all along.
And not only they are being messed in the air with near mid-air collisions and also their other crap that they are pissed off about, they're also getting buzzed at nearly supersonic speeds under the water. So between submariners, surface fleet, and their aviators, they are up to their eyeballs in ET, and they're sick of it. They are in rebellion against any more secrecy because they want this crap dealt with. The Navy went F you to everybody else, including the Air Force.
One of the most important things that's happened from the TTSA activities is that the barrier for witnesses to come forward was dropped way down. And so they started coming forward in large.
Well, the Navy gave a directive.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, the Navy said it was report your sightings and we're not going to give you a hard time. I'm talking about witnesses from anywhere within the government realized that, hey, we've crossed the Rubicon here. We're not going back. And so they started coming forward. And not surprisingly, they came forward to Elizondo and Mellon. Who are they going to come forward to? I mean, Linda.
Well, when it became clear that they were going to come forward to Mellon and Elizondo, the government actually set up a humongous panel of people from all sorts of departments, and they wrote down what they thought the United States government position should be. That's been going on for months.
Wait a minute. I'm not aware of this.
Well, I am.
What panel are you talking about?
It's internal. It was set up internally, and it's just not known. It'll come out. But it's not known. But that has been going on for months and months and months inside, where the U.S. government's official position would be determined. So the first part of it came with Susan Goff's statement that, yes, these videos are real. Yes, they're unclassified. And we don't know what they are. That was the first output of this government study group. Which said that they don't believe it's human, and that that's number one. And they can't say that it's not human, but they don't believe it's human, or they would have said it.
Skeptics are going to keep saying it's drones.
The study panel has been going on for months and months.
Yeah. Skeptics will keep saying it's drones over and over again, and there are a lot of advanced drones mixed in. The thing is, UAP stands for phenomena, and they don't really call drones phenomena.
Right.
Look,
another thing I would like to point out.
Let me jump in. It's important, Nicole. Danny made an important point. Really important. That statement would not have been released saying it was unknown if they knew it was drones.
Right.
Of course. No.
Well, and that's also what I wanted to point out since we brought up the Navy. Melinda and I touched on this a few weeks ago in our interview. The Navy's interest in this is truly a force to be reckoned with. I don't know if people quite realize the R&D that is behind our United States Navy. And yes, Bob, you brought up a lot of that has to do with what does our Navy carry? They carry our fighters, our boys in the sky, you know, they all can't launch from the United States or just our bases. The Navy is invested in this type of technology. And not just what's in the sky, but under the sea. And if you go to the Navy Research Lab's webpage, you can see the type of technology that they are developing and that they are invested in. Of course, they're going to want everybody's information across the board on what they have and what this is. The Navy wants to be able to develop this, use it, and push it out to the general public.
It's also,
don't you think?
The Navy was where they parked the research in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
The Navy was leading in terms of the behind the scenes research from the get-go. And it's not, we don't know for sure why they did it, but I think the best guess is that they felt if they parked it with the Navy, people would be less likely to find it. It would be like, you know, you would think it's got to be the Air Force, right? And so they put it with the Navy, and they were in the forefront of research for years. And so the Navy's known about the ET presence going back 65 years at least. And they've done their job, and mm-hmm. a lot of the research is probably there, and they have a lot of information. And it turns out that because they're at sea with aircraft and boats, they're in a position to encounter both unidentified flying craft and unidentified underwater craft. So they've had a tremendous amount of contact and encounters. And so, not surprisingly, the Navy events were chosen as the keystone events to introduce to the New York Times with mm-hmm. the fantastic gun camera footage, which guaranteed that this isn't going to get ignored. If it wasn't for the political situation, those two articles in the New York Times would have blown this thing sky high. We'd have had
The Navy does have a bigger budget than the Air Force. And if I'm following everything correctly right now with Space Force as part of our military industrial complex, Space Force, their budget comes from the Air Force, as far as I'm concerned, or if I'm following it correctly. So they're losing a portion of their budget to Space Force, and now they're having, I guess since they don't have as much in the R&D department as the Navy does, they're even wondering if they can even upgrade our current planes and spy planes and drones and all these things to keep us at the forefront, where the Navy, well, let me tie this back to what Grant was saying about Project Blue Book maybe and its affiliation with the Air Force. You know, we might not necessarily even trust the Air Force right now based on what we went through with Project Blue Book. And it was a different time back then. The political climate, we trusted our government in the days of Blue Book. And here we know through research, they were just trying to explain away the phenomenon. We know that from Dr. Hynek. So I think the difference what we're seeing now with this push is we do have that transparency, or at least that want from the powers that be to say that it's transparent, and they want to disclose what they can in a national security safe sort of way. And the other difference, I think, between Blue Book and now that we have is we have fellows out in the community like Bob McGuire here. You know, it's not limited to where just the government or just these private little UFO groups are researching this or bringing their science to the table. We do have more amateurs or citizens involved with this. And the climate's different. We're not just going to take a spoon-fed press release from the Air Force like they would do with Blue Book. We have thousands of people that are going to stand up and question everything that they say. So
51 years ago, Blue Book was closed down. It was a brilliant move. They put the whitewash program under the Air Force and put the real research in the Navy. So everybody's focused on the Air Force and what they were going to find out, not realizing the thing.
And had Condon flush them.
And the Navy's over there working on Lord knows what, a craft or whatever else. So the Navy is getting their place now. It's almost like, hey, I don't think it's a matter of trust. I think it is mostly the logistics of working out the disclosure process, which is very complicated, very difficult.
Well, you can see what the Navy is.
That and the CIA would develop all of these spy planes and spy things, and they would have a fight for a while with the Air Force, and then the Air Force would take it over. But both of them used UFO sightings to cover up their classified research.
This has been a
pain in the ass since the 1940s.
The one thing I'm going to be watching for is we have hearings, and about 3 weeks into the hearing, somebody puts out a suggestion that we need to pass a $2.9 trillion military bill because, well, obviously, we're going to have to defend ourselves against the extraterrestrials.
That might be on the way. I can't rule that out.
You can't rule it out, but I'll tell you.
No. TTSA wants a cut, and I don't blame them.
Well, I will blame them. They know better.
Yeah, right? But look. If we cannot say today, because we've actually had a conversation with them, why these things are having near mid-air collisions with our fighter pilots and other things while they're entering restricted air zones, while they are breaking into the communications links and showing up at secret encrypted cap points when these planes assemble, that is a threat. In anybody's definition in the United States government, that's a threat.
I want them to have funding.
Potential.
How many American airplanes have they shot down?
You don't shoot down people while you're doing reconnaissance.
Here's two things that the government knows. One, there's extraterrestrials here. And two, I'm saying government. I mean the people in government that are in a position to know and are supposed to know. There's extraterrestrials here, and there is absolutely nothing we can do about it. And three things, actually. And we cannot possibly defeat them or defend against them. That's just the reality.
Okay,
now,
look, you can't study this effectively in secret, because you need a large collection of smart minds all thinking about it to try to figure it out.
Talking about studying it. I'm saying this. The government knows ETs are here, knows that they can do whatever they want. We cannot stop them, and we cannot defend against them.
Yeah.
Now, they know that. But, hey, the public doesn't have that level of understanding. And so, hey, let's ask the public to give us $2 trillion of tax dollars so we can build a massive alien defense system. And what comes to mind is the second Independence movie. I forget, Independence Resurgence, whatever the hell. This was awful. The first one was okay. The second one was unbelievable. And there's this scene where the ET craft has come back, right? And it's the size of the Earth, and it's approaching the moon. And it's going to go by the moon. And they have built this defense thing on the moon. It's this sort of thing that can shoot a beam, right? And so this craft, which is the size of the Earth, just goes, blows it away. So the nature of the truth embargo is fundamentally misdirection, lies, mendacity for national security. There's been a good deal of lying and misdirection. In the disclosure process, I get it. But once disclosure takes place, this has got to end. If they want to continue to lie and play games with the truth and our money, then we are going to have to push back really hard, because it's very difficult for the Defense Department to turn down a couple of extra $1 trillion, no matter what they think about the ET reality.
No, but what I'm telling you
is in this field to step up and go, just a second here, all right? That is ridiculous, right? We need that money to take care of ourselves, because we're all going down the drain. So this is a key moment, and it will happen. I don't know who will do it. It'll be probably Republican.
If you accept the hypothesis that they don't know what it is, and these things are showing up in controlled airspaces, The only safe assumption is they need to study the crap out of it and treat it like a threat. That's the only safe thing they can do.
They've been studying it for 70 years, and they know what it is, and they know who they are.
I'm not sure you're right.
There are plenty of contactees that work at the Pentagon, work in the military services that have provided information to them. They know pretty much the races that are here, whether they've talked with them or not. They know they're extraterrestrial. They know their craft. They know what they look like, right? So the fact that we don't know that, yeah, we could assume, oh, they don't know they're scared, it's a threat. No, this is a game that is being played. Everything that has come out of the TTSA is not quite what it seems. The announcements from the DOD and the Navy, not quite what they seem. There is a public relations agenda going on here. And the reason I say that with confidence is that that's my perspective. I've looked at it from that for a long time. The details and the research are not my genre. My genre is why are they doing what they do when they do it, right? And the history of this issue is games and game playing, lies, and so forth.
I think you're ignoring how difficult the disclosure issue really is.
It's really difficult.
Absolutely. Incredibly difficult. Look what it's taken to get where we are now. My God. I mean, the coming together of that program inside the DOD, the formation, the TTSA, all of that, that was remarkable. Never happened before. So it has been difficult. We could have had disclosure in 1947. We almost had. We could have had disclosure in 2017. We might have had it under George H.W. Bush.
What makes you think we're going to have it now?
Because if you've read the 575 news articles about the TTSA and the Nimitz case, which I have, and they're on my website, if you had watched the interviews and the news coverage of it, and the statements coming out of the boys at TTSA, particularly Mellon, if you're aware of the briefings and all of that, if you look at the big picture, I'm a guy, I stare at the forest all day. I don't stare at the trees. If you look at that, it's pretty clear where it's going and what's going to happen. Doesn't mean is it still hard? Yeah, a lot harder, but I'll tell you, if you could go back and talk to these guys about 2 weeks before the WikiLeaks documents were dumped, and Mr. Comey came forward with that last minute statement about the Hillary Clinton investigation in Benghazi, they would have been looking there going, man, this is all about to happen. She's going to win. We're going to announce. We're going to get this going. We're going to get the hearings. And we'll probably be literally in the post-disclosure world by the spring of 2017. That's how close they were. And they're, oh, and by the way, we're going to raise $25 million.
That's how close you think they were.
Yeah, it's an informed opinion. And they were going to raise $25 million at least on that initial offering.
I'm just saying there's a big, huge difference between what we would like to happen and what will or could happen.
Hey, I'm giving you my informed opinion. If it doesn't happen, I'll be happy to, I'll probably go public and say, wow, I got it wrong and this is why and what have you. But why do I bother to give my informed opinion? And I'm doing it to a lot of my colleagues because it may be the biggest event in human history is coming. We've got decades invested in it. And I'm encouraging people to get ready, to prepare, and not just assume, wow, it's never happened, can't happen now. No, this may be it. And if we want to be part of the post-disclosure world, we're not gonna get automatic invites. We're gonna have to work our way in. We're gonna have to do what is necessary to make sure we're heard and so forth. I'll certainly do everything I can to help all the colleagues I have. But the post-disclosure world is going to be a free-for-all. It is going to be the most intense thing you will ever see in your lifetime. And the people with money and power and influence are going to jump up and say, look at me, look at me. Even if they don't know a flying saucer from a Boston cream pie. And so for us to be heard, we're going to have to work hard for that. And that's why I put this out. If I'm wrong, hey, sue me.
I just think Tom and I and probably others believe that your description is of a scenario that's so uncontrolled and so nonlinear that it's much easier to assume it just isn't going to happen.
You say it's not controlled. I think the TTSA has put an enormous amount
I think it's nonlinear. They can't control human behavior.
They can't control everything, but they have controlled. They have followed an agenda with reasonable precision. They've produced predictable outcomes. It hasn't gotten out of hand. They haven't offended the press. They've taken some hits, but most of those hits were small. So I think they are controlling their agenda pretty well. But hey, look, they couldn't control the election in 2016.
Yep.
So boom, their whole thing collapsed. And they were hanging out dry.
Before I have to leave, I just want to give you one perspective. I so strongly believe, I believe like Tom does, but I don't want to speak for him, that we're not likely to get the disclosure that you want, that I retired early. I sold 20% of a company I own to set myself up in retirement so I could work full-time on SkyHub and things like it so I didn't have to rely on the friggin' government to release anything. I want the data to be public. I want it to be wide open and something they can't control. And the team in SkyHub is incredible. And so technology and public awareness and open source, open transparency, completely wide open data, no government control, don't even let them talk to you. That is a way to help force them if your scenario is wrong. And I hate to have to go, but I do have to go.
Well, let's shut it down now, and we'll do it in another month. I think we're sort of moving along because we are getting more and more stories. So let's do this in another month, and we'll see where it goes. And I appreciate everybody joining me. And I think it's been a really good lot of bombs dropped here. I think a lot of people are going to be watching this, and I appreciate everybody's input on this whole thing.
The government drops bombs, Grant, not us.
But thank you, Grant. Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Let's do it again, and we'll contact you. Nicole will be in charge, and we'll do this again.
Thanks, Grant.
Beautiful. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, what have I got here?